Are you ready, Board Member Durham?
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
I do have to step out and make a call here in a little bit.
Today,
I did silence the ringer, at least.
State Board will come back to order. Ms. Corrigan, would you please call?
Board Member Durham.
Here.
Board Member Flores.
Here.
Board Member Goff.
Here.
Board Member Vasnek.
Here.
Board Member McClellan.
Here.
Board Member Rinkin.
Here.
And Board Member Schroeder.
Here.
Great. All
Thank
present.
You. First item on our agenda today is a presentation on the 2018 School and District Performance Framework targets. Commissioner?
Yes, thank you. If you didn't get enough of targets yesterday at 6 p.m., then we decided we'd bring you some more today. So I'm going to turn this over to Alyssa Pearson, Associate Commissioner, Marie Hutchton, Principal Statistic Consultant, and Ashley Peach, our Director of Accountability and Data Analysis. And you've seen Ashley before, but she has moved into a new role here at the department. We're thrilled to have her. Who knows who would want to move into the accountability division? But she
Are you
did.
Saying it wasn't
and
us?
We're happy she did. We're happy she moved into this role. So I'll turn it over to you guys. Thank you.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for starting your day with this lovely topic with us. We will try and differentiate between what we talked about yesterday and what we talked about today and get real clear on how these things are similar and how they are different. But I know it's a lot of data and targets and goals and numbers, so we'll do our best to get through it. And then you'll be done. So our goals for today, we want to review your role in the target setting for state accountability. So today we're not talking federal, we're talking about our state system and specifically our school and district performance frameworks. So we'll talk about your role in that. We'll review the existing target setting methodology and discuss plans for how we're going to handle the PSAT 9 test, because you know that will be given for the first time this year. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Ashley will go through that with you. We'll review the existing baseline data, so the grades 3 through 8. We're going to kind of talk about how those targets were initially set and any changes in the actual performance between 2016 and 2017, so you can see what happened in our state. With that. And then what our goal really is that you all feel comfortable and can ask whatever questions or ask us to do any work in between now and November. Your state board rules require you to vote on the targets for the 2018 performance frameworks, the ones that will come out next August, to do that by November of every year. So we want to do today. Today is an information item to get this information out, ask any questions for us to go do any homework for you before November so that you feel ready in November to be able to vote. So nothing you have to decide today at all. We just want to do that prep work. So here's the state statutory requirement around target setting for the state board. And the part in bold is really the important piece here. The board needs to review this. After you review our performance as a state, the state board shall set, reaffirm, or revise the appropriate, ambitious but attainable, there's that language again, statewide targets for the measures used to determine the levels of attainment of the performance indicators. So that's what's in law. And then what that actually means, let's talk about that for a little bit. So on the performance frameworks, I think you all remember, we've got the different content areas, English, language, arts, math, and science. This is the achievement section, the actual achievement measures. And for each content area overall and for the disaggregated groups, we report the mean scale score. And then we have a table that correlates that mean scale score to what that rating is. If it's a does not meet, approaching, meets, or exceeds rating for the school. And then points are assigned based on that. Those points in the end roll up to get to the overall rating for a school or district. You know, it's the achievement, the growth, if it's a high school, the post-secondary workforce readiness, all that comes together to the overall rating. But what you all are asked to do is to figure out what those cut points should be to assign the does not meet, approaching, meets, and exceeds. So that's what we're talking about today, is how do we get there. This is really different than the federal targets we were talking about yesterday. Because remember, the purpose of those is really about, let's put some goals out there and we'll report our data across those goals. We don't need to use it for identifying schools or districts. It's kind of more aspirational. These are really about how we identify our schools and how we differentiate the levels of performance that we see in our schools to direct the support that we have available. So if we raise these expectations much, much higher, we're going to have more schools getting identified. The way we have it set, the way you all decided back in June of 2016, after we talked for a few months about all the different options, was really to do this normative approach. So we'll talk through that a little bit more today.
Ask a question.
Sure.
Thank you. Ms. Pearson, this first chart is completely theoretical, right? I mean, these numbers are not, and if they actually reflect something, can you tell me why? Because it makes, we know our participation rate is substantially better than 72.8%. So are these numbers,
this came from an example school. So this just came off of this year's preliminary school performance framework for one school in the state.
So this is one school. So then,
And you all got an attachment that came through with the board materials that had kind of the proposed cut scores. It's based on what was in what you approved for 2017. So you've got those actual numbers of what those cuts are for does not meet
this
approaching.
Is the potential scoring.
The potential scoring guide. Thank
this
you.
One right here.
So in terms of potential, when you have the score, that I presume is a test score.
Yes, it's using the mean scale score of all the students in the school that are included.
Define again for me mean scale score.
Sure. So each student gets a scale score on the test, right? They get a number between 650 and 850 on the CMAS assessments. The science is a little bit of a different scale, but for English language arts and math, that's the scale. So each student gets, you know, whatever their scale score of 725 or 733. Then when we look at the performance of the school overall or of any of the individual groups, we take the mean of that group of students, and that's what we compare to the target. So the mean, the average number of scale scores for all the students in that group. And then we compare that number with the numbers here.
So essentially, the score that an individual student has is based on the number of right answers, essentially, on the test.
Yeah. Okay. Marie is our testing expert at the table.
I mean, basically, it's a reflection of, you know, your essay was worth 90 points if, or you, in the multiple choice, you got 50 right answers. And
correct.
Right. So that gets you a score.
Yes.
And then we could equate that score to a percentage. That, you know, going back to if you got the 90th percentile, if your score is X, you did better than 90% of the students who took the test. So that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
But we're doing it again through the normative process, so we don't compare averages. We compare we've set an expectation based on what would you say the expectation is set on to get to the mean scale score. It's obviously not you're in the 90th percentile. That's not it. Right? So the expectation is, in other words, I could take a 90th percentile score, and you could tell me it's approaching or meets, or I could take an 80th percentile score or a 70th percentile score, and you could translate that for me into this language if I asked that to be done, correct?
So there is a difference between the individual student scores, and there really isn't a percentile ranking methodology that accountability uses for the student scores. What we do is we look at the school ranking and distribution, so once we have done those mean scale scores, to say what the average performance of schools in Colorado is, and then that is what we do the percentile ranking based upon. So for that, we say you're at the 15th percentile of schools in Colorado. With this particular scale score, or mean scale score associated with your school.
I think what makes this complicated for parents and mm-hmm. for and for board members as well, is that that in my years of teaching and as a student, if you got 93 to 100, you got an A. Uh-huh. If you got 85 to 93, 92, you got a B. And if you got, I'm trying to remember what the C was. It was
76.
70-something or rather, raised to 84. And then we had generally my scores somewhere down below that.
Yeah.
So there is a way, if we wish to take the data you have and equate it in the way I just described. Your school is either A, B, C, D, and F, based on relative rankings. And I guess what I really want to know is you have how many categories? One, two, three,
four
categories, which is the wrong number. But five would be better. But yeah. So you have four categories. But you could tell me the percentage of each school or of the students who meet, and if it's not, if you're using four, you'd probably do 90 to 100, 80, 70, 60 maybe.
But didn't we have five?
That's for
districts.
That's for districts, right?
And that's the overall rating.
So I just am trying to what I'm really going to want is, and maybe it's here later on, that somewhere in this presentation, the exceeds, or what is that?
There is an exceeds. There's not an example of it on this particular school.
Okay, so exceeds 3% of the schools exceed, or 10%, or 20%, or whatever the number is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Will I have that information readily available?
Yes. So perfect. We do actually set up the targets so that 15% of schools get the exceeds rating. That's the baseline conversation we're going to get to have.
And okay, so 15%. So it will equate. That seems high for exceeds.
So Steve, your system, the historical system that we had in schools, was criterion based.
No, I understand.
And that's not where we're starting out. We do, I think, we have said that we want to get to that point where we actually look at the performance of the kids based on the questions. Right now, what we're saying, as we break out these groups, that it's the 15%, the normative. And the statewide or national assessments that our children took, those were normative. They were not the way it was in school. So the statewide assessments historically were normative, and it was.
Yeah, and I do understand that, and I think then that does get us directly to the argument. If you wish to demonstrate that our schools are failing, you set one score, which is not empirically based. And if you wish to show that the schools are successful, you set another score, which is also not empirically based, because they're not being compared one against the other. They are being compared against a theoretical opinion of what someone should know versus, and that's a...
Which is what our teachers always did.
That's not what this teacher did. There's versus a reasonable opinion. So and reasonable people will disagree as to what someone ought to know. So that is subjective, whereas if you did better than 93% of the kids who took the test, that's an empirically justifiable number. Now, it may not meet your or whoever's setting these scores' idea of what they should know, but it does give you a very objective measure of how they compare with everyone else. And I think the discussion we have not had, and we've allowed the federal government to drive this issue. If you want to create a crisis, and you want to mandate all kinds of change, and you want to have 95% participation, and you can drive all of that off a number that represents someone's opinion rather than something which can be empirically identified. And that's the debate we haven't had, and I think we need to have before we conclude this process. I apologize for taking that much time, but I did want to see if I could make sure that we had all the information so that we, when we get to the end, we can actually have a discussion of should there be four or five, how many should be in each category, is it 93 to 100, is it 90 to 100, is it, I mean, 85, top 85% get the highest grade? Seems a little easy to me, but, you know, those are the kinds of things I think we need to talk about, and I just wanted to try and see if I could understand how to frame the argument, and I apologize for the time I took.
Thank you.
And that was really helpful for me to hear. I think the direction we had understood from the board when after we had spent those months talking through different target setting methodologies that you all really wanted a normative approach right now to get at that, you know, if you, and we did some assimilations.
I think
if you
that
looked
was,
at criteria
I think that
reference.
Was the majority of the yeah. board's opinion. I think I've been in the minority
well, and you're
on
looking
that.
For a but normative approach you, also,
yeah.
but it's a different normative approach.
I'm not sure.
When
I'm
you just
for
take
that.
100 kids and you line them up and say which is the best score and which is the worst score, you don't actually know what they know, but it is normative. It tells you
yes.
in relationship
yeah.
well, to each other, this is where they are.
Right.
It doesn't tell us in relationship to what was actually asked. It doesn't tell the business community they know or they don't know. They just know one knows more than the other. So they're all...
Which is of
nothing,
some value.
They're all kind of subjective yeah. in some... They measure different things. I mean, that's the rub we get yeah. ourselves into.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think for us, just to know the orientation that we come at this with is we're really trying to figure out which schools are in need of the most support. That's, to us, the goal of us trying to figure out and differentiate schools, which ones we really want to be able to learn from and which ones need the most support. And just we have real limited resources in being able to support schools, and I know you guys have heard this from us before, but we get the $10 million from the U.S. Department of Ed. We get about $2 million from the state, and that is all we have to give school support. So if we started identifying more and more schools, we wouldn't. It's fine, we can identify them, but we don't have the resources right now to really be able to provide much great support for them. So we're just coming from it of who do we most need to get at, get resources to, and supports to.
Board Member Flores.
Do you think we should ask the legislature for possibly to match the federal fund, which... You know, we're talking about $10 million instead of the $2 million, and that would really be helpful, wouldn't it?
I think that would be a good question for our conversation for us
no,
to have another time. To have more, I think it would. The districts would definitely benefit from having some more resources to support them when they have performance challenges. So, okay. I'm going to turn this over to Ashley now. I'm just going to reiterate what Dr. Antis said. We're so excited that she's joined our team as Director for the Accountability and Data Analysis Unit. Ashley's got a great perspective, having worked very closely with schools, also run for Charter Network accountability and compliance work for them. So she's got good in-the-field systems perspective. We're really excited for her to join us and be here with us. So.
Welcome.
Okay. I am excited to be here. It was voluntary.
I know. Your arm was twisted.
And spent 2 years on the turnaround team, working really close with schools and districts across Colorado, and learned a lot from them. Excited to learn more from Alyssa and the data team on the accountability and policy side now. And so I'm going to go through some information about the indicators that will have to be revisited for this year, the 2018 school and district performance frameworks. All right.
Sorry.
The specific indicators that will have to be revised for the 2018 school and district performance frameworks will be the high school English language arts and math academic achievement sub-indicators and the adequate growth metric, which is that growth metric, which is growth to standard or on-track growth to college and career readiness growth indicator for all grades. We will also revisit the other indicator, which has that chronic absenteeism component to it right now, for revisions this year. Based on where we go with ESSA.
May I ask a question?
Clarifying, yes.
May I?
Mm-hmm.
So we have absenteeism, but yet from that group, we had science. And did...
So what I heard yesterday from you all is that you would like us to leave the plan as it is right now, just move science around, but you would like to talk at a future meeting about whether to and how to include chronic absenteeism in it. In terms of our state accountability, I think we've got to work out with them across the street. There's been some understanding that in order to include chronic absenteeism in the state accountability system, that would need to change in state in the state statute and get added in there if we wanted to have it in our state system too. So I think we have it on here. We know it's this area that we need to figure out where it goes.
So it's
this
across
session.
The street.
I think it's, okay. Yeah, but it's also a question for you all to think about for the federal purposes of it. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk to you all about if you want that on the agenda for November or December when you'd like to talk about that.
Great. So we are setting targets for high school English language arts and math academic achievement indicators due to the addition of the PSAT-9 assessment for ninth graders this year. The grade 9 PSAT was selected because it is aligned in content, skills, reporting categories, scores to Colorado's existing high school assessments, the PSAT-10 and the SAT, which is administered in 11th grade. The SAT suite of assessments in grades 9 through 11 will provide us with a longitudinal evidence-based system that measures growth in relation to essential college and career readiness success outcomes for students. Ninth graders will begin taking the PSAT-9 in the spring of 2018, and CDE is currently intending to include the results along with PSAT-10 in the achievement indicator by content area, with PSAT-10 results for multi-year calculations and in growth calculations from 8th grade to 9th grade, which would be the CMAS grade 8 to PSAT 9, and from 9th grade to 10th grade, which is PSAT 9 to PSAT 10. And we will also use it for 10th to 11th grade, so that gap from PSAT 10 to the SAT. Any questions there? I just wanted to, I know I said a lot in one sentence.
Will we be doing these tests exactly the same way? In other words, the results will come back very soon, like in the same year?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Before summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so actually to your question, the results from the 2018 PSAT-9 administration will be available in late June. And we will have to wait for those results before we are able to calculate the specific values for the targets that we're talking about today. For the performance framework targets, but today we want to suggest that the State Board approve the calculation methodology that underlies those targets that will be used to establish the targets for 2018 school and district performance frameworks. To align with existing performance framework targets for English language arts and math achievement in all grade levels, CDE recommends using the norm-based percentile rank methodology to set PSAT 9 and 10 targets for 2018. PSAT 10 targets were temporarily baselined on the 2016-17 data, but we can now revisit that for 2018 with the inclusion of PSAT 9 results. With this methodology, sub-indicator ratings will be set based on percentile ranges that align with those that have been used to set framework targets across all other grade levels, included in the frameworks. And on this next slide, you'll see that distribution we talked about, where consistent with previous performance frameworks, this methodology ensures that the displayed distribution of school-level ratings for each sub-indicator content area for the baseline year, which means that 70% of our schools will fall within the approaching and meets categories, those yellow and green categories, with 15% falling on either end into the does not meet or the exceeds categories. And we're planning on using these same targets to be applied to the district performance frameworks. And this is baseline information, and so for the 2018 performance frameworks, we'll see schools in this distribution. But once that baseline is set, next year we could have schools that move in between these categories based on that baseline. So we could see more schools in the exceeds category, more schools in the does not meet, depending on how their performance is compared to this year. And I want to stop here as well before we go on to talk about adequate growth metric. If there are any questions about the achievement.
Board Member Flores.
So we have a large number of students who haven't taken the test in districts where they should be doing much better, and these are top students. I mean, I'm just kind of going. So let's say that many of those students who didn't take the test scored high, as they should. So would this kind of change? And I mean, it wouldn't do maybe not much for the gap, but we could get higher. I mean, 85 wouldn't be like the cut point or where we are, or 50, and our scores, mean scores, would be higher. And we could have, we could see something like that next year if people are just, well, we're going to take the test.
And we'll see. Right, we'll see. Assuming that we have, I think what you're saying is that we expect a higher participation in ninth grade. And if those students also participated in the prior year in the eighth grade assessment, then we will have more information. I hesitate to predict whether they'll necessarily go up.
Yeah, that's what I'm.
I don't.
If they're high performing, they should bring everybody else up.
But we don't know what they are. I mean, I really don't think we know. They're all different. They're just all different situations for the opt-outs.
Yeah, and it's a new ninth grade test, right?
It's
so
a
we
new
won't.
Ninth grade test
it
too.
Won't be.
That's
we
true.
Won't be able to.
That's true.
The scores won't be
That's
comparable
true.
That
yeah.
way.
I forgot about that. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. The goal is to also have a relevant and meaningful adequate growth measure on the 2018 performance frameworks. And adequate growth is the idea of how much growth is needed for a student to make a particular proficiency level goal within a given time frame. Since adequate growth was defined based on previous state assessment, with the new assessments, it makes sense to revisit the definitions of adequate growth. CDE plans to work with the Longitudinal Growth Technical Advisory Panel, or TAP, over the coming months to develop options for measuring how schools are helping students grow toward college and career readiness standards based on new assessments, and we will come back to the State Board to present that work in the spring.
Questions? Ms. Masnick?
Who is the Longitudinal Growth Technical Advisory Panel?
Yep, that's TAP. That's who, next week you can probably speak better to that.
You want me? Okay. It's an advisory panel we've had since, 2006, 2007. It's been a long time. They helped develop the Colorado's growth model. People have changed on it, but it's national and state experts in measurement and how to measure growth. Mostly district personnel, but we also have some more technical advisors. We have a board member representative. I can send you the full list of membership if that would be helpful. Sure.
Now I'll pass it on to Marie for existing measures.
Thanks. So wanted to sort of briefly talk about the existing metrics that we have and the establishing the process of establishing baseline targets. So there's different, uses of that word baseline, which, we frequently bring up. But just so you know, that this is a single year of data that is chosen as the baseline for creating our percentile rank targets. And so, for an example, in 2016, the state assessment data results were, when we set the 15th percentile, that equated to the scale score of 722.3. And so we've set that 722.3 as the consistent scale score that future scale scores will be compared to determine if, you're meeting or approaching, the state expectations. So the intention behind that baselining is that future years can be compared against this consistent baseline expectation, and then we can see if schools are making progress in meeting state expectations. And then just so you know, baselining is required whenever we have a new assessment because it is a new scale and new scores. And so, that's an important thing for activity for us to do. And then also whenever there are significant changes in an assessment, like that is reason for us to consider rebaselining. And oftentimes when you introduce a new assessment, you do see sort of atypical scores in the first couple of years of the administration. And so we have been making a point to reanalyze the data in every year we've had PARC to see if, things have shifted in a significant way that would mean that we would need to rebaseline. So that's kind of what we're going to look at today is, the results from 2016 to 2017 and how the baselines could potentially shift between those 2 years. This is just a chart that sort of shows when we have set the baselines on our existing sub-indicator metrics. And on the two up in the right-hand corner in red, I apologize, the ones in 2018 should really be the only ones in red. Those are the ones that we're going to be baselining this coming year. All of the others have sort of, been baselined as we've gone along and gotten the new assessments up and running.
So the first, you know, content area that we wanted to look at was CMAS math at the elementary school level. And so, you know, so from the plot that we're showing you, you know, you can see that the 15th percentile corresponds to roughly a scale score of 719. And we also did include the PARC proficiency or performance levels on this graph. So you can see that that corresponds to a level 2. And then when you go to the 50th percentile, that corresponds to a CMAS math scale score of 735.4, which is a CMAS level 3. And then the 85th percentile is around 752, which is a CMAS, you know, level 4 proficiency level. And so mostly what this graph also shows is there are two lines there, you know, one orange and one blue, but they pretty much overlap. Like the scale scores have been very similar from what we saw in 2016 to 2017, indicating that our performance or the performance of Colorado students has been pretty consistent over time.
Can I just clarify?
Absolutely.
The 15th, 15th, and 85th percentiles here are based on school performance. So it's looking, it's not individual student right now. It's looking at all the students in a school, and then we look at the school's highest scale, mean scale score to the lowest, and what's at the 15th percentile, 50th, and 85th. So on average, where our school's at. So this kind of shows there's a little bit of an uptick of schools from 16 to 17, not very much at all, but there's a little bit on average when you look that way.
And then when you look at CMAS math for middle school, it shows sort of a similar pattern where, you know, the 15th percentile is of schools is around, you know, 716, 50th percentile is 731. That's a CMAS level 3. And then in this case, the 85th percentile also falls at a CMAS level 3 around a scale score of 746. And again, we have seen like a slight uptick in 2017, but the results are pretty similar from 16 to 17. Since we are going to be re-baselining the high school math for the PSAT-9 and PSAT-10, we don't have graphs for high school. So then moving on to the CMAS, you know, English Language Arts for elementary school, you can see that the scores here are a little bit higher, just, you know, across the board. The 15th percentile corresponds to about a 722-724, and that is, you know, on the cusp of the level 3 performance level. The 50th percentile is around 740, and then the 85th percentile is around a 756-7, which is a performance level 4. And so you can see that for ELA, there has been more improvement between 2016 and 2017. Like, there has been, you know, sort of a noticeable increase. I mean, it's been small, but it is noticeable increase in the scale scores over time. And in general, actually, Colorado students are performing better on ELA than they are in math. And then the same also holds true for middle school. You can see that, you know, sort of that the same level 2, level 3, level 4 performance levels, and the scale scores have increased slightly in 2017. So, kind of just to summarize, you know, the CMAS math in 2017, the 15th, 50th, and 85th, you know, percentiles for schools are between 0.3 and 1.1 scale score points higher than we saw in 2016. And then for English language arts, they're about 1.1 to 2.1 scale score points higher than the 2016 baselines. So, you know, given the small differences between that 2016 and 2017 results, CD staff is recommending that we just continue using the existing 2016 baselines for the 2018 performance frameworks. And, you know, the intention behind this is to try to ensure consistent interpretation by the field and then the opportunity for schools to demonstrate that they are improving over time. And so keeping that original baseline and then having them show growth, that feels really good to people. science is on a different scale. I actually don't know what the range of score points is, but you can see here that the 15th percentile corresponds to a 531 or 532, which is at the performance level 1. The 50th percentile corresponds to about a 601, which is similar to, or which is sort of in the performance level number 2. And then the 85th percentile corresponds to a performance level 3. So note that on science, we have 4 performance levels in total instead of the 5 that are available on CMS. So just because this is the level 1 to level 2 is not actually sort of substantially worse than we have on the park. It's just a different scale and different performance levels. So interestingly enough, in middle school, we did see some more differences in the performance in 2017. So here you can see that the 15th percentile, you know, is somewhere between a 518 and a 527. The 50th percentile has been between a 586 and a 591, and the 85th percentile is between a 641 and a 643, which is almost to the level 3 cut. So this is the only place that we have seen that actually the 2017 results have gone down, that they are actually lower than what we had originally seen in 2016. So, that is just an interesting trend that we are seeing in our student scores, and we'll have to look at 2018 to see if that continues. So we do have CMAS science for high school, and so you can see here that the 15th percentile is a level 2 performance, about a 564, and the 50th percentile is still in that level 2 at 609-ish, and then the 85th percentile is also still in level 2 at about a 651. And so this one, sort of that level 2 category is quite broad, clearly, that all of our, average school performances fall into that range. And there's not a whole lot of difference between the 2016 and 2017. 2017 is a little tiny bit lower in the middle of the scale than what we had seen previously, but not anything, substantial. And so, as I kind of had said before, just to summarize, at the elementary and high school levels, we really saw a lot of parity between the 2016 and 2017 results. At middle school, we did see some declines in 2017, up to about 10 points. And so that's something that we should be, paying attention to as we move forward. But given the small differences between 2016 and 2017 for elementary and high school, CD staff is still recommending that we continue using the existing 2016 baseline targets for the 2018 performance frameworks. And so this is just, sort of setting that standard so we can actually tell if, schools are making progress and if students are performing better. And I think that is all of the baseline target stuff I want to talk about.
Sounds good. So like we talked about, you all, your state board rules ask you to vote at the November meeting on these. We'll start doing more stakeholder conversations around adequate growth and what makes sense to do there now that we have multiple years of the same assessment data and we can really start looking at that. And then once we've got the PSAT 9 data available in end of June, we'll plug in actual numbers if that's the way you all want to go. But what would be helpful for me, for all of us right now, actually, is if there's things that you want us to look at before November that you would like to consider looking at targets different than what we've done historically, that would be really helpful for us to know, and then we can do some of that work to bring back to you for the November meeting.
Colleagues, okay. Feedback?
Just one question. Are the number, I'm trying to remember if there's a statutory requirement of 4 for categories the, or
for, does not mean
something tells me at least we talked about that once.
So statute has the plan types for schools, and they say performance improvement, priority improvement, and turnaround for schools, and it's got the 5 levels for districts. That's in state statute. I don't believe that the does not meet, approaching, meets, or exceeds is in statute.
So we could go to 5 if we elected.
If you wanted to differentiate the achievement levels, and you probably want to do it to be consistent on all the metrics, so achievement and growth and all the post-secondary workforce readiness measures, if you wanted to make 5 levels of achievement there instead of 4, I think that's in your purview to do.
But it then makes results less comparable with previous years.
It does.
So there is a downside, yeah, if you want to try and hold people to some accountability.
Yeah, it would make the translation across the years a little bit of a challenge.
But since we've done it for the year 2017, mm-hmm, I mean, wouldn't comparing it to 2017 and...
Well, in 2017, we've had the 4 levels. We've had the does not meet, approaching, meets, and exceeds.
I think it would, I mean, being accountable and being able for the public to understand better, I think the five, if it's not just, you know,
so I think
down heaven.
Yeah. If the goal is to try and explain the overall performance with more nuance to give more differentiation there, I think the area where that would have more impact is in the overall ratings and not in the individual measures of English language arts achievement. Having five levels there, I don't know if that will add as much more information as if you did it and had more descriptors of performance overall at the turnaround, priority improvement, and performance level. Because right now for schools, right, we only have those four levels. And if your goal is really to help differentiate the performance of schools more, you could do it at that overall level, and that might make more sense. Julie, I don't know, you probably don't know this off the top of your head. I got to go back and look. I think the board has discretion to add additional, maybe just district accreditation levels. I can't remember if it's school plan types too. We can go back and, yeah.
But I can't remember about plan types either.
Yeah, we can go and look that up for you all if you're interested in that. Get that to you sooner to
and
see.
That might even make people feel better. Districts feel better.
Well, I don't know if that's.
We don't want to do that.
That's
well,
not
I
goal.
Think they would. I mean, this
but we've had these. We've had these targets for 2 years.
55.
Right.
To
so
85.
We can compare 2017 to 2016.
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct.
Yeah. If we change it now. For 2018, we lose some of that ability to compare.
Well,
yes. Board Member Rankin?
Ms. Pearson, if we differentiate five levels instead of four, wouldn't the trajectory, I mean, look at how close these are. Yeah. Wouldn't it be the same?
Would the end result be the same? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, so this is so in the weeds. That getting the numbers to line up, the points to line up and make sense and not go into a bazillion decimals and make the weightings all work out between the different measures is really complicated. And Marie's worked really hard to make sure that when the numbers, like the numbers here add up with the numbers there, and to add five levels will add a level of complication that might make her head a little bit explode. So what would be helpful for me is to really understand what the goal is with the levels so that we can figure out the best way to meet that goal. And if it's more differentiation of schools overall and helping parents understand better the differentiation of schools, we can work on that goal. I don't know that the individual adding a does not meet, approaching something meets, exceeds, adding one more in there, I don't know that that will help that. But
the points are, I mean, 55 to 85. And then 85 to, and adding another level would make it seem more fair. Fairness.
I'm not hearing that from schools. I think before we start making changes, that we find out whether that really has value for them and for parent groups.
I think it
because,
would.
Well, I realize you think that. I'm suggesting that we ask the folks who are affected by it. Because what I keep hearing over and over again is stop changing things. Let us move forward with what's been legislated and what we've set the rules for and try some consistency so that we are not constantly trying to adjust. Now, if we're doing something that's not helpful, we ought to adjust. But let's find out if there's a real problem.
Well,
just because we think that.
Well, not just because we think. It's because we've worked with students enough to know that that's an issue, and that's an issue with parents.
I don't know. Let's figure out if there's a way to get
it. It's not something that we've.
Students and
it's
parents.
Not, it's certainly not anything I've heard.
Yeah, it's not. That hasn't come up in our stakeholder groups that I can recall hearing about.
Board, go ahead.
Yeah. No.
Board Member Goff.
would you be so kind as to remind me how the science assessment works? We're at once in high school, correct?
Yep. We're at
so
5th grade, 8th grade, and 11th grade. The 11th grade, I need to pull it up, but our participation rate, when you were showing that
high school data, our participation rate for high school science is one of our lowest participation rates in the state, if not the lowest. I'll pull it up and look.
Thank you for that point. It was reminded me it's 11th grade, so even which is a consistent thing. But within that, there is how does the course taking experience line up with that, and what have the students had? Is there I hate to say this all the time, but a general mean average selection of courses by that point? Because if we've got STEM programs developing and in the works already, continuing to go forth, it's the kind of age-old problem that the public has had with when we give certain tests. So if these kids haven't had the benefit of an experience in a course, you know, we hear they haven't even been taught this, and yet they're being held accountable for it. So I'm just wondering if that, I'm sure you have, if that thinking has gone into some possibilities for not only perhaps the lower participation, mm-hmm. who knows, but this line is so not, I can hardly see the blue. And you know, it's just, what could we do to, what should we be thinking ahead about moving this along? Because these kids ought to be, they should be advancing. We're doing it right by them in every topic area and subject area, but this science has always been a little bit of a sticky wicket to talk with people about, how that lines up.
And I think that's probably a good conversation really to have with assessment and the standards unit, but I know part of the decision about where in high school to place that assessment, what grade, was to figure out where along most students would have taken courses and gotten the content that's being tested then. But that's about as much as I want to answer, and we can get more information for you from assessment and from the standards that understand kind of the course taking better.
Well, and you know, just one quick add-on that in addition to being assessed or tested before the content's been studied, it's one thing. There's also way long afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people who have that concern about, I've got a, well, depends on what graduation requirements are, actually.
We'll talk about that later.
How long into high school does something get?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Do we provide, going back to the science assessment, do we at the end of, after we've graded the assessments, et cetera, is there a process at CDE that goes through the assessment, looks at the various questions, and provides feedback to the field? Whether it's opt-out or not opt-out, where are the strengths and where are the weaknesses across that we see across the state? I know districts need to tease that out at the district level, but do we have a broad feedback that we can provide to schools?
Districts and schools are getting reports, but I don't know well enough if we're doing it at a state level. But
introduce yourself, Will.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Will Morton. I'm Director of Assessment Administration with the Assessment Unit. And in terms of providing statewide feedback in terms of the science assessment with regard to, overall performance in subjects within the science assessment, we don't provide that. Districts and schools do have their individual results, but in terms of an overall state reporting, we don't report that way.
Seems to me that might be something we might want to talk about as a board. What information are we providing statewide on the strengths of our students? we might get, I mean, we tend to get feedback, quite frankly, from the business community on what our kids don't know and do know, and maybe it's an opportunity for us to say, yeah, that's what we see, and then maybe have some public discussions about where curriculum, we're not going to change the curriculum, but we can certainly put some suggestions and pressure on these are the areas. In other words, we have mm-hmm. these assessments. We don't put the assessments out so that everybody sees what the questions are. Yeah. That, but we can go in and look at what's the performance level on these different subgroups right. and topics different. So that we can start having some discussions, having the PD available, yeah. et cetera, and kind of make a difference. I might be naive here. This might be so complicated that staff can't do it, but it would just seem to me that we ought to be able to break that out. Board Member Flores.
Well, you're talking about, you know, the tests, and I think what I saw in schools is that science and social studies was not really pushed. The emphasis was really on English language arts and math. And so there is no push to teach science and social studies, and that's why I think we need to get those scores out so that those very important areas of learning are taught in schools.
Well, I agree with you, but my point is it's not, I don't want to just have the score. I'd like us to be able to have conversations about what are the areas where there are some real weaknesses in our students' learning. I think it'd be. I think teachers would actually appreciate that, and I think district. I forgot what they're called. Right. The people who are in charge of the different subjects within the larger districts could be very, very helpful in helping move that along.
Yeah.
Maybe we should make that an agenda item at some time. Actually, I'll leave it to you guys to tell us how we can have that conversation. What works? What can you do given the mechanics of our system so that we don't go off and suggest something that can't be done? But I think there'd be a strong interest in that. Board Member Rank.
Mr. Will, I'm sorry I didn't catch your last name. I know we have a lot of prep for these tests, 9th, 10th, 11th. I mean, I've been online, and I've been able to take a lot of those myself just to get familiar with them, and I think that's a very good idea, and I know that none of those questions are on the test. But if a certain area seemed to be missed by a lot of students in the state, either the test is wrong or you need... You say that the tests are at the school level, but they don't have that broken down, and it sounds like we at our level don't have it broken down to emphasize the areas of weakness, even by the different targets, you know, our red and gold areas. I mean, those should be something we really work on. Is there any alignment with remediation along those lines? I think that's kind of what we're talking about here.
So the test itself is and the blueprint, so to speak, for the test is published, and we can get you that information so that schools and districts they understand going into the test, you know, so much of the test is going to be on this content, so much of the test will be on that content within the overall science test, and that information is available to schools and districts.
Then is there follow-up into those same areas where the school may not have done well in a certain area following the test?
Another way of asking that question, I think, might be, can you show us the kind of information that is sent back to schools?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Maybe back to the student, but also back to the school.
Yep.
And then maybe the comments that we make about what we should be sharing statewide will make a little more sense when we see what it is that is analyzed.
Yes.
And then at the same time, it would be, I think, interesting to see that blueprint as well, just for us, since we don't live in the weeds.
Yeah.
Board Member Goff?
Thank you for suggesting that. I was just going to ask about the report card or the report page that families and or the classroom is aware of. I wonder, could that be done, a general area where this, on that scale, where the weaknesses are and where the strengths are, would it be valuable at all to us or anyone to see a statewide picture of that?
That's kind of what we're talking about.
Take the 11th grade science exam. Is there a way where we could get the whole statewide big level view of how the state is doing on certain strength areas and where we need more work, like we tell kids. But I think, too, a lot of that might fall into place when we're discussing and working around this whole idea of, is science being disregarded, social studies being disregarded, or not? It depends on where. And if we're hearing about all of these developing STEM programs and certificate availability now, tied in with graduation completion and matriculation, and how that goes, I just think it would be helpful to have those parts so we get a general idea from the high-level view of how our state's doing on these things.
All three levels.
Yes, and I've always wondered why, that we don't see a general overview, even a sampling, three or four examples of what our schools and districts see. We don't need to have individual students, but I think pictures of even within our congressional districts. But I'd prefer to start with the whole statewide picture about where are the areas of study, instruction, that sort of thing, where we are doing great and we can spread that around, and where we're not doing so great. Thanks.
Board Member Masnick?
Dr. Anthus, didn't you tell me, refresh my memory, SAT and PSAT, do they incorporate science?
Yeah, they do.
I don't know. I would have to talk about the science. I'm not sure.
So the SAT and the PSAT do not assess science content. They do have essentially reading in the science content or writing in the science content type of questions. They provide a sort of a cross-content performance score, but it's not actual testing of science content within the PSAT or the SAT.
So then the truth is we don't really have a good indicator of how our students are doing in science specifically. I mean, we know that a lot of these students are not taking the science assessment in the 11th grade because they have SAT and other tests they find more valuable, probably. But we don't really have a good measurement of high school science performance.
That's it?
We have a limited understanding of what the performance is. I think the assessment's a real strong assessment, but because of the participation, we have a limited understanding of.
Board Member Flores?
I'll say it again.
You don't need to say it again.
Yeah. No, I do, because, you don't seem to believe me when I say to you that I have done a study of textbooks and such out in Colorado schools. They're not available. And, in fact, I invited Alan Schaefer Kennedy yesterday to come and tell you about what was going on in high schools and how demoralized teachers are because they can't teach when they don't have tools. And books are tools that are very necessary. What started this all is when I came to the state 20-some-odd years ago and I didn't see any ESL material, and I mean in English, in so that it was helpful for kids to learn the various areas in science and such. I went to several school districts when I was teaching at the University of Colorado, and I just couldn't find any textbooks. And textbooks, When you ask students and teachers, they do not have them. So school districts do not spend money. It is not being taught. And I'm not one for testing, seriously. You know I'm not. But when I think in an area that is so important, and when business is telling us that kids come with no little knowledge in science, and then in other areas, social studies, then we have to kind of goad people to teach it. And it may take a test to do that. And when we only test it once, and now you're saying that it's really not, you know, concepts are not tested, but reading and math. So
he was talking about
I was talking
SAT.
About the
SAT.
We have our own assessment. Right. We have our own science.
Right,
assessment,
once.
But it's not highly taken. It's not participated in.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's, I don't know. We have to teach science and we have to teach social studies also, because these are areas that kids need to, a knowledge base that kids need to know.
I don't think anyone would argue with you about that, but
right.
I would
but
love
how
to
do
move
we
on
do
to
it?
The
that's,
next.
That's something we need to think and we need
sure,
to.
Sure, but can we get on to the next topic, please? Thank you.
Madam Chair, can I ask
quick.
You all want some direction on this, right?
We would like to know what you need to feel comfortable voting in November. If there's things you want us to look at, if there's other proposals you want us to bring forward, you would need. And if you want to talk to us afterwards.
Well, I think it would be helpful, I mean, certainly on your workload, if there was some sort of consensus. And as much as I'd like to see five majors instead of four, I think I've reached a conclusion listening to the discussion that comparability is probably more valuable at this point
at
in
moment,
time
yeah.
than, and you're sacrificing a little bit of clarity and understandability to get it, but I think the trade-off is there. So if you're looking for guidance, at least from my perspective, I wouldn't go to the work of trying to revise and do everything for five categories. I think what you presented is very likely to be close to a final product. And so if that's the guidance you're looking for, that's at least where one member is.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ms. Masnick?
And we do this every year.
We do this every year.
Yeah,
this is not the end. This is just to move forward.
You guys don't get rid of us, sorry.
It might be every 2 years. But.
No, this is an
annual.
And
we do at some point need to have this more serious discussion about how we want, but for now, I think, given the insignificant changes between the years, I think your recommendation that we just move on forward with this one and then see what happens next year is appropriate, but also provide the time to incorporate a serious discussion they went to about what we're doing.
They can keep moving. We can keep moving along in the future by threading in some of these topics that we're bringing up here and how that relates to future conversations mm-hmm. on this and many
other things.
So I agree with Mr. Durham. I think this is not the time to be upheaving too much. And, it's good. Thank you.
I just want to add one more thing.
Board Member Rankin?
I just think it's amazing to see how these track like they do. If there was a big difference, we'd be having a whole different conversation. Mm-hmm. So
true.
It says that by using the right numbers and the same numbers, we're going to get a better picture of what's going on. So thank you for the work that you've done on it.
Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you for being willing to work with the numbers.
I know. I'm sorry. Now you might be done with numbers. It won't put this in time.
The next item on our agenda is an update on our state board operating procedures. Commissioner?
Yes, thank you. I believe I'm turning this over to Ms. Cordial and Colson.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, board members. I want to just quickly go over the draft operating procedures, what we've done, where we are right now, what next steps will be, and then answer any questions that you may have about the current draft that you have. So at the board retreat, we provided you with a draft version of your operating procedures. From that, and we gathered feedback or edits from you, and so since that time, we've incorporated those recommendations and comments. I also met with a few board members whose questions did not get answered at that time and addressed those questions then. And then since that time, I've incorporated all of the recommendations that you've made so far. And then Julie had also added a few more just kind of clarifying edits so that the language is a little more clear in your operating procedures. So we'd provided you with that draft version in your board packets to review and let us know if you have any further questions or edits. And we also anticipate that the board will vote on your operating procedures at the November meeting. So we just want to make sure we get all of your questions answered. Okay.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions, changes upon the changes, Go ahead, Mr. Durham.
I've had a chance to review it, and I think it incorporates certainly all the items where there was consensus, and I don't know that we had many outliers. So I don't, that's what Churchill said, there's little I would change and not much to regret or something. So I think they're in about as good a shape as they're going to get in.
Ready for a vote. Remember, we look at these, what, every 2 years?
Yes.
Okay.
Or as needed.
Counselor, do you have any comments you want to add?
I really don't. I mean, I enjoyed being able to get down into my grammar geek mode. I mean, we removed some passive voice and simplified some sentences. And I think they're just substantially more readable than they were when this process started. I don't think round changed, substantive content from anything you all had discussed.
Okay. Thank you, folks. So ready for a vote next time? Board Member Goff.
Thank you. I'm not going to raise anything major. I'm just looking at picky words here. On page 5, in the middle of the page about nominations, when we're electing officers, the current wording has nominations shall be made from the floor. I mean, I'm getting into the minutia here, but by use of the word from the floor, what kind of interpretation, because we do this at a public meeting, is there any danger that that can be interpreted as literally from the
that floor instead of this floor?
Well, this is the floor I think we intend to portray here, but it's kind of just an off word to me. I don't know how else it would be phrased, but we don't want to. I just thought I'd bring that up. You can mull over.
People able to make nominations. Yeah. It's already clear somewhere earlier that only the board members elect their leader.
I don't think it is. It's the first time it came up when I was reading through these. So.
And I noticed that turn of a phrase as well, and it's in the version that we inherited. And I certainly think it could be phrased in a better way. I have read it to distinguish between something where you'd be coming in on nominations that were made in advance or submitted in advance.
Nominating committee kind of a thing.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
But, and if it would simplify it to say from the dais instead of from the floor, to at least say it's just that you're in open session, you're sitting where you're sitting, and you make motions and nominations and they require a second.
Does that help?
Yes, I mean, I'm sure.
That's a good idea.
I think it's interesting. And then one other, this is totally only a typo.
Okay,
and I.
Yeah. Where?
Sorry. I'm looking for it. It's just a typo. There was a place where the word engaged, it should be engages, but it says engage. And I think it's the part busy under committees.
Find things.
Yeah.
Well, only place if it's the right engage.
Okay. And then I believe our previous conversation about open meetings and such clarified some things. One last one, and I'll stop on that. Page 15, Under C, electronic meetings, page 15. Mm-hmm. Board members may attend board meetings by electronic means with prior permission from the chair if they attend the relevant portion of the meeting in its entirety. What's relevant? Relevant to what? Because to say you can attend electronically is one thing. Mm-hmm. So what part of that means?
I think that has to do with quasi-judicial, that you have to listen to the entire presentation in order to be able to vote.
So the relevant is the part upon which action will be resulting or something.
I think so.
So I'm just thinking we might need to clean that some up. Added words. Yeah,
in which action is taken.
Yeah. Relevant to what?
That's we can.
We're all relevant. All.
The entire section upon which.
Yeah, what is the?
In other words, you can't just call in to vote. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Correct.
I think that's the
point of that.
So we understand that. We interpret it truly, but when you we need to clarify it.
Okay. We can do that.
Thank you.
That's I'm sure it. I do have Thank one you. Quick clarification on page 10. We've struck M, which I understand the logic for. However, since it's still in statute, any board member could suggest at any time that we enter into a contract with the Board of Community Colleges. And nothing, the fact it's not here doesn't prohibit us from doing it.
Correct.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
Okay. All right. With those changes, if you'd be kind enough to bring it back next time. Should we put it on consent, folks?
It's all right with me.
Okay. Does that work?
Okay.
Yeah, it makes me feel a lot better.
Okay. To do consent?
Uh-huh.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Next item, we'll now conduct a public rulemaking hearing for the rules for the administration of the School Health Professional Grant Program 1CCR 301-97. The State Board voted to approve the notice of rulemaking at its August 16, 2017 board meeting. The hearing to promulgate these rules was made known through publication, public notice on September 10, 2017 through the Colorado Register and by State Board notice on October 4, 2017. State Board is authorized to promulgate these rules pursuant to 22-2-107-1C-CRS. Commissioner, is staff prepared to provide an overview, please?
Yes, thank you. I'll turn this over to Misty Ridgway. Sure.
Excuse me a moment, please.
We really cannot hear
you. Yeah, you are.
I swear your microphone doesn't work unless you're on top of it. We're not that far away from you. Just so you know.
Right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. See if I've got it all my mouth on.
Right on top of it, it works. But
it works. So I need a longer one.
Try it now.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a little better.
No, closer.
Yeah,
thank you.
Closer,
you could be a rock star.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Is it picking up? Okay. Thank you.
Singing.
Yeah. We do not want to pretend. We do not want to pretend that ever.
All right, I will turn this over to Ms. Frist then.
Thank you, Commissioner Anthes. Good morning, everyone. Nice
morning.
To see you all. So, as you know, my name is Misty Ruthven. I'm the Executive Director of Student Pathways, and before you today is the hearing for the School Health Professional Grant Rules. So, these rules were noticed in August, so 2 months ago, which brings us forth to the hearing today. You will notice that you have three resources and items in front of you. You have a memo of an overview of the rulemaking process. You have the red line of the rules as well as a clean copy of the rules. So this rulemaking was prompted by a direct result of the passage of Senate Bill 17-068, which is early support for students, which expanded eligibility of the School Health Professional Grant to include all schools. Before, it was only secondary schools. As you may remember, the School Health Professional Grant, the purpose of the grant is for districts to hire either school psychiatrists, nurses, school counselors, or social workers, and focus on substance abuse prevention and education. So following the notice from the August meeting, we did send these rules out to multiple stakeholders, including school districts, et cetera. We did not receive any external comments to the proposed rules. However, we did, and I'll go through the rules in just a moment, we did add a comment that was received from all of you as a potential change for your consideration. So I'll go through the rules in detail. Excuse me. That cold is going around.
May I ask a question?
Clarifying question, yes. Otherwise, let's hold the questions.
Okay. So why isn't it July 1st, due July 1st to July 1st the following year? Because, I mean, the end of the year in May, May 1st is, for schools, is just hectic. So why not let the school...
Board Member Flores, where are you for the benefit of those of us who don't know where you are?
I'm on page 2 at the very top.
Page 2 of the red...
Yeah, at okay. the very top. And that's the only question I have is, you know, I mean, May 1st is hectic enough, and especially in small districts where you don't have the people to really look at that. And if you just kind of end the year to, and then have it, you know, be it July 1st when people have time to just breathe and then get on sending this, as opposed to having everything at the end of the of May, I think it would be, and it's only a month, and it I think it would give people time to breathe and respond and be more at ease.
Did you get any feedback on this? I mean,
I'm just thinking of schools because
I know you are, but schools were asked and they didn't say anything, so I don't know if they didn't read it or if they thought it was okay.
Sometimes it just passes by. If the state says it, then it's a state, and they don't want to mess with having work in a state department. That's an issue. But knowing schools and having work for a school district in that area, I just think that we need to think about that. If it's not going to be a big...
Madam Chair, would you like me to address that now?
Please do.
So one of the reporting measures that's a requirement for us as well as districts is statutory in 2296-105, which requires May 1st to be the deadline.
It's statutory. Mm-hmm. Well, somebody...
Thank you.
Somebody in statute was not over there, was not thinking.
Could you proceed where you were going?
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Madam.
Thank you.
Well, they don't. Look at what happened with having to have another session.
So thank you so much. So just to reiterate that we did not receive any external comments on the proposed rules, and I'll go through the rules one by one. As far as we did include the addition that was recommended by this body by a few members from our last time that we had this discussion. So in going through the rules, you'll notice that the primary change that is consistent again and again is the change from secondary to inclusion of all schools to include all levels, including elementary. The one change on page 2 that you will see that is different from what was directed in the Senate bill that is prompting these rule changes was the conversation from the last meeting. And at the August board meeting, there's a note in one of the little bubbles. We've been, you know, yesterday there was a theme about bubbles, so we'll continue that. At the August board meeting, board members suggested this change, which was the removal of the assurance to participate in Healthy Kids Colorado survey and the school health profiles. So as mentioned to you in August, that is not a requirement that was in the original rules adopted by this board a few years ago, so it is at your discretion if you would like to make that change. On page 3, the only additional change then is just ensuring that the rules include the based on available appropriation language, and then again the consistent change of secondary being struck and the inclusion of all schools being available to apply for this grant. So, Madam Chair, is there anything else that you'd like me to cover?
Questions, colleagues? Board Member McClellan.
Yes, thank you so much for this on. Yeah, thanks so much for this presentation. On page 2, with that board input regarding removing section 2.01(2)(i), what is the practical implication or the practical impact of the removal of that clause?
Sure.
Does that lessen the requirement on schools? Does that have a practical change in what we should expect from schools?
From what we've heard from schools, it's not substantive in that they could voluntarily continue to do that at their discretion. So it was something, if they found that information valuable, they can continue to do that if they chose. So one of the things that was asked last time is, what information and how, what evaluation might be required for the school health professional grant, and how would we move forward? So right now, we are following the statutory minimums and what's in rule, which basically is process information, such as how many folks are hired using these dollars, how many schools are involved, and then also measures that are established by schools and districts themselves, and then schools and districts measure themselves against those goals that they establish. So that's the type of information that we're currently reporting for this information, but certainly there's nothing that would prevent schools from participating.
And so this doesn't open up a pathway to non-participation that did not previously exist?
No. Correct.
Participation is never required.
Correct.
In that
it
survey.
In order to get this grant.
Thank you. Any other questions? Board Member Durham.
Final version of the rule, page 3, 201, paren 5, paren A. Behavioral health, I understand this was to be directed at substance abuse? Mm-hmm. So why do we have the words behavioral health in there?
Certainly. So that's a statutory reference. I can find that for you.
So that is statutory?
Where
yes.
Are you?
I'm on the final rules, page 3, number 205, paren 5, paren A.
Since it is in statute, it could be considered duplicative in the rules. I would,
that's what I was asking is.
So
behavioral health is?
It might just be in the declaration, though. I'm looking for it to see if it's in the body of the law. It is in the body of the law in 2296.104. That's the behavioral health care professional matching grant is what the legislature originally named this grant, and then we've called it the school health professional grant.
We're revising these rules pursuant to the new bill. What's the new bill's title?
The new bill's title is School Counselors Early Support for Students.
And am I correct that they didn't increase the amount of money, they just divided the pie smaller?
So there's a bit of confusion with what this bill did in that it impacted two grants that are very different from one another. The school health professional grant did receive an increase outside of the parameters of this bill. The school counselor corps grant did not receive, that's the one that's getting its pie divided smaller.
Okay. All right, thank you.
If there are no further questions, we don't have anyone who has signed up to testify today. So that concludes our hearing. I would love to have a motion, please. Anybody got a motion? Board Member Masney?
I have the motion.
Well, you don't have it. Does anybody have it?
If it's unanimous today, then you can vote today.
Then we'll be done with it. And this is not the first time it's come forward, so therefore, do I have a motion? Do you want to? Right there, motion.
If I have the
next page.
I'd say the chances of unanimity are slim.
Oh, really?
Are they?
They are.
All right, then bring it back next time.
Okay.
Because Carter would be concerned about the health.
Wouldn't this be the time to ask?
Well, it's statutory.
I just don't like it.
I would, thank you. We're going to bring it back next time.
Well, I would want to be on the record.
So, folks, we're ahead of schedule?
What?
Which, I don't even like to use those words because I know this is going to come back to bite.
Well, good evening, yeah.
So, if you don't mind, let's put the, we put off board reports last night. And I mean last night, I don't mean yesterday afternoon. So, would it be all right if we did that right now? Because we've invited folks and I don't want to start early. They haven't had a chance to be here. Are we back on?
Let's do it.
Everybody's here?
It's not a timed item, though, so.
It's not a timed item.
It's, yeah.
Y'all feel ready? Thank you for coming. So the next item on our agenda is consideration of the graduation guidelines. Do we really want a motion first? Based on yesterday's fumbling, or?
I think maybe you should
have a discussion.
Yeah, let's hear the testimony.
I think so, too, mm-hmm. If that's okay with you guys. So, Commissioner, staff prepared to provide an overview and
yes, thank you.
Of a presentation.
I will turn this over to Misty Ruthven, but I do want to thank our panelists for coming today to provide a little extra perspective. So thank you so much, and I know Misty will introduce each of you, so thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Commissioner, and good morning again to the Board of Education. This is a follow-up discussion from our conversation in September regarding graduation guidelines, and from our long conversation of an hour plus or so, we had several questions come up that were directed toward districts and what had happened in the graduation guidelines work group that was convened, as well as the community conversations around the value of a high school diploma and what was really happening on the ground from the implementation perspective. So I know that you had asked to also hear from business folks. Unfortunately, we had some challenges with scheduling, and we did have a few business folks secured that at the last minute were unable to make it, but they certainly offered to come in November if that's something that's helpful to all of you if you'd like to continue the conversation into next month. As a reminder of the conversation for today, so certainly we have three fine folks from the panel that will kick off here in just a moment. The other things that will come in front of you today are consideration of the technical recommendations. If you'd like to have further conversation, that's certainly an option to continue into November. If that's something you'd like to vote on today, that's up to your discretion and where you'd like to go with this conversation. So the other piece, just as a reminder to all of you, the reason why this is before you today is you directed CDE staff to come back to you every 2 years with considerations and updates to the graduation guidelines menu. So without further ado, we're proud to have three education leaders with us today. And thank you. Just to really reiterate, Commissioner Anthes's welcome as well. We are so, so appreciative of you being here. And one of the things we've asked them to each provide 3 to 5 minutes of remarks just to introduce themselves, their schools, as well as some of the initial questions you would have regarding implementation of graduation guidelines and what their local graduation requirements look like. So from there, they are prepared, but may not speak to this in their initial remarks. If you do have additional questions about other menu options or specifically the high school equivalency conversation that has come up regarding GED and the other high school equivalency tests, they might be able to share, they're prepared to share their opinions with you about that conversation in the work group as well as their individual district opinions. So with that, I'd like to turn to Senator Keith King to talk about the great work that you're doing in Colorado Early Colleges.
Well, thank you, and good morning. Thank you for having us. I have a little thing that maybe we can give all of you. We have a theme every year at our school. We started with grit and a growth mindset, and we've really tried to get our kids to think about being successful and carrying on further than what they would normally do in a high school. And then we went with hope, trying to give them hope for the ability to see what they can do once their future is done with high school. And so now we're doing champions. Our champions is to make them feel like they can accomplish things, that they can go someplace and they can do things that nobody has ever done. So we're finding that that's possible. The early colleges is a great place for kids to find where they want to go and how they want to accomplish their things, what they want to do. And we are really, as you can see, we're graduating a lot of students with associate's degrees. We're saving you guys and the parents of these kids lots of dollars as far as it goes, as far as the money that we're spending. So we have four schools now. We have one school in Colorado Springs, one in Parker, and our newest one in Aurora, and then in Fort Collins. So we have about 2,500 students. We're in the heart of the south part of Fort Collins. We're in the heart of the tough area of Aurora, mm-hmm. at 6th Avenue and 225, and we're in Parker and Colorado Springs. So we're really excited about what we're accomplishing for the kids. The things that they are accomplishing are just outstanding. The average student graduates about 47 college credit hours, and they are able to accomplish that with us paying for those college courses, and they are able to get them a degree and do things that we just have never seen happen before. I just will make a quick comment. I came back to the legislature last year and carried Senate Bill. So I didn't carry it, but I helped do Senate Bill 272. And that was a bill to make these guidelines go into the school performance framework and make it the one thing that we did not have in our schools, and we did not have the ability for kids to demonstrate that they were college ready by taking concurrent enrollment. And if you can go past concurrent enrollment, our kids are passing their college courses 95% of the time. They're college ready. They're demonstrating they can do it. And they're doing a very good job at being successful. We have just tremendous success. So probably as long as you want me to go for now, and I'll come back and talk more if you want.
Great, certainly. So Diana Zackham, you're a district administrator for Englewood Schools, and I was remiss in mentioning that both Susan and Diana were part of the conversation about the graduation guidelines work group, so that might be helpful.
Good morning. I do have some formal remarks that I have prepared. So, of course.
Our microphones are a little, so you have to really talk.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Diana Zackham, and I'm the Director of Post-Secondary and Workforce Readiness for Englewood Schools. I have had the honor of leading college and career readiness initiatives within the district since 2008 and leading the graduation guidelines work within Englewood for the last 3 years. Englewood engaged in a multi-year process to identify the priorities for the new graduation requirements for the class of 2021, or this year's freshman class. We met with several stakeholder groups, including parents, teachers, community members, administrators, our superintendent, and school board members. And in February of this year, we adopted a policy that reflects the values of our community. And there are really four main priorities. The first is we value a comprehensive high school experience. We want our students to have multiple opportunities to explore a variety of interests in addition to completing a rigorous core academic program. And so this is reflected in our requirement of students completing 23 credits in required subject areas. The second is that students will demonstrate college and career readiness in English and in math proficiencies via the CDE menu of college and career on the CDE menu of college and career demonstrations. We opted to adopt the entire menu because we wanted to provide our students with as many options as possible. The third is that we wanted students to have a meaningful plan for life after high school, and that is demonstrated through our requirement of an ICAP. And the fourth is that we wanted our students to contribute to our community, and this is reflected in our requirement of 20 community service hours. So engaging our community and adopting the policy was very important and powerful work for us. But this work really continues now as we focus on implementing these graduation requirements. So at this stage in the work, there is still a great deal of analysis, discovery, and reflection occurring within our district. And we are reviewing policies, systems, and processes, all with the lens of increasing opportunities and removing barriers for students so that they can achieve their dreams for the future. So there have been several positive outcomes that have occurred because of this work, but due to time, I'd like to just briefly highlight three of the positive outcomes that have happened because of our graduation guidelines work. So the first is we have really been doing a deep dive in analyzing our K-12 programming and looking at, do we have the right courses and programs in place? And do we have gaps and redundancies? And so, for example, through our analysis, we knew that we had excellent 712 STEM programming in place in our middle school and high schools. But what we found is that we had nothing at our elementary schools. And so graduation requirements were not just about what was happening at the high school. It was systemic work. It was K-12 work. And so this helped us actually pursue outside funding from the Gill Foundation. We were able to secure STEM labs in all of our elementary schools for this school year. And so we now have an aligned K-12 STEM program to support our ultimate STEM pathways at our high schools that connect with concurrent enrollment and AP programs. So this is really aligned work. Another area we were looking at was increasing access to program that we know has a powerful impact on post-secondary outcomes. So for example, we know that students who take concurrent enrollment courses are more likely to go on to post-secondary education. So we have been doing a deep analysis of how do we increase access to concurrent enrollment. So we've done a lot of work on increasing concurrent enrollment offerings, how do we communicate with our family populations, and get students access to concurrent enrollment. We've been working with our post-secondary partners, increasing the number of faculty members that are adjunct professors. So a lot of systemic work on concurrent enrollment, which is a portion of the graduation guidelines work. A final example is our need to start college and career readiness work earlier. Most of our district work initially had started at seventh grade, but now we know that we actually need to start as early as preschool. So we are now working with our preschool, our elementary principals, on ways that we're doing systemic college and career readiness, and this has manifested itself, and we are now working with our elementary counselors, and they're collaborating with our secondary counselors, and we're doing aligned work on systemic college and career readiness, P-12. So these are just three examples of positive systemic work that has come out because of the graduation guidelines. We firmly believe that all students should be prepared to achieve their individual post-secondary plan, and that as a K-12 system, it is our duty to deliver the programs and services to help them achieve their dreams for their future. In fact, our superintendent, Dr. Wendy Brubin, just sent out a district-wide communication earlier this week to all of our families about the importance of college and career readiness and the programs that we have to serve our families. So there's still a great deal of work to be done in this area, but there's also great momentum and great commitment. I'd like to add one final note on this. There has been a great deal of support that has come from an informal group of district leaders that have met from across the Front Range. And this has just been district leaders that have come together very informally to meet to talk about how we can collaborate on this work. And CDE has been a great champion of supporting these informal meetings. And there's been representation from small districts and large districts, but from across the Front Range as we come together talking about how do we share resources and work smarter, save time. And I really believe there's been great momentum, and we're sharing a lot of, we're championing this work about college and career readiness. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Susan Ortner is the principal at Holyoke Schools. Holyoke High School specifically.
Yep. Actually, junior, yeah. Senior high school.
Oh, so. Good
morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thanks for the opportunity to be here. I feel like I'm representing rural schools today, and was one of the few members of the Grad Guidelines Committee who worked as a rural school member. So, wow. You have an awesome program in place. That's impressive. Small schools are different. We all wear many, many hats, and I'm talking from our paraprofessionals to our parents to our students to our staff members. And so this has been an ongoing process for quite some time. In 2010, we revised our graduation requirements in Holyoke, feeling like it was very important for our students to leave us well-rounded. We added, at that point in time, 2 years of requirements of career and technical education classes. So students have three different CTE programs that they can dip into in Holyoke, and they can choose all three or they can choose one. So we have an ag education program, a business program, and a family and consumer science program. We also wanted students to have opportunities to experience fine arts, so they have a one-year fine art requirement and a year of PE requirement, as well as additional elective requirements. At that point in time, we added an ICAP requirement, and we have a year-long program for students in 9th grade, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade with a curriculum that we've developed over the course of time, including 7 mindsets, wanting our students to be more mindful about going out and being able to compete on a worldwide level. Most of our students are involved in a lot of different activities. So 90% of our students are involved in extracurriculars, including athletics, other activities, organizations, drama, music, that sort of thing. So they get a lot of different opportunities. Most of them are involved in 2 to 3 different activities. See a lot of kids at school from like 6 a.m. until they finish play practice at 9:30. It's crazy. But they still manage to do well in classes also. We had 42 students graduate last year, and those 42 kids earned $2.4 million in scholarship money. We have about 75% of our kiddos go on to post-secondary education. About half of those kids leave us with at least a first semester under their belt in a post-secondary program. We have a program that we share with Northeastern Junior College in Sterling, which is 50 miles away. Okay. So where are we at with graduation guidelines? We adopted the graduation guidelines menu in 2016. We've been talking with parents and students, staff members about that for a long time. We did tweak it again this past summer. We added or updated the SAT scores, and we added the, oh my gosh, the sentence skills score from Accuplacer. We do not have some things on the menu in our policy. At this point, we don't have a capstone course. I've got 23 staff members, 250 students, 8 periods a day. Most of my elective teachers teach 7 preps. All of my teachers teach 7 classes. And to add a capstone on top of that is difficult. That's something that we're still looking at with room to revise our plan as we go forward. 96% graduation rate. Community that's very supportive of our students and our school. So, that's where we're at.
Thank you.
Questions?
Colleagues, questions? Maybe I should start down the line, if that's okay. Ms. Goff?
Good morning. Thank you very much. It's always great to hear people tell about their lives and their stories. For any of you, I think I know the answer in some cases. How involved or how active is the BOCES structure? Maybe a Holyoke would be the place to start with that. Just thinking as you were talking about your what sounds like a desire and an interest in developing a capstone project situation, how might that has it been conversed about or brought up, or just, you know, what are the possibilities for things like that through the regional support, which is, I'm assuming, with Inglewood as well, would be part of your concurrent enrollment. The regional notion of the community college structure and such as that, or even four-year universities for that matter, but another topic. So I just would like to know that. And also, if you all, I don't believe, I'll look at the statute again, but I don't believe there's a timeline or a deadline type of situation here for anyone. But considering the fact that it is this year's freshmen who are entering into our first cycle of the new requirements, did you all kind of set up your own deadline, your own, you put your own emergency, you know, our point here in time where we're going to do this? And how has communication with your communities gone as far as the message around any big changes, if that was perceived to be the case for your communities as well? So BOCE's involvement, perhaps, deadline, and communication successes or observations, probably as much as anything.
So our BOCES has been very involved, and we had a principals meeting yesterday. We meet monthly. They're providing professional development for us and have for several years now. And so that's been very helpful. Having the conversations with principals throughout the area is extremely helpful. We haven't really dug into capstone classes. It's been a topic of discussion, mm-hmm. but yeah. There's room to do more. Time.
Thank you.
We are not formally working with the BOCES through this process. I think the biggest collaborative group that we've been working with is that kind of informal front range group that I mentioned.
Right.
And that's kind of provided those same structures of
sure.
What are you doing in Jeffco? What are you doing right. in Cherry Creek? What are you doing up in Poudre? That's kind of provided that collaborative structure and of support.
So we're a CSI school, and we do not belong to a BOCES. We do some collaborative stuff within CSI, and that works for us, and we have a ability to cooperate and work with the people at CSI. The graduation requirements really flow very nicely with an early college because everybody that comes in takes the ACCUPLACER, and when they complete a course, they have to take the ACCUPLACER again to see if they're college ready. So every one of our students, before they go into college courses, they are proving that they're ready by the ACCUPLACER, and they are demonstrating that before they go in. So we're very used to that. It's very useful, and it's the scores on the graduation menu here are really low. They're made for probably an Associate of Applied Science degree, but they're way too low for a kid going into a regular college algebra or English. They need a lot higher score than these. If we accept the kids into the 121 math and English, they would be at this level. They would have a lot of kids failing the courses. So we make sure that they're ready, and we make sure that they have the opportunity to succeed. And we don't put them in those courses unless they demonstrate that they know the material and can do it. So it's working out very well for us, and the guidelines are flowing very well with what we're doing. And I'm really happy about the concurrent enrollment issue. That really made a big difference for us in how we go about doing what we're doing. So that worked out well.
Did you have a question? Board Member Massey?
Yes, thank you all for coming, and congratulations on all of your success and what you're doing. I was wondering, I have heard occasionally some criticism of the graduation guidelines, specifically that it's a big menu. And I think the criticism I've heard seems to indicate people think that some districts think they need to adopt all of them. I was wondering what your experience is with that. Do you feel like having a large menu of options is helpful to you, or is it pressure to offer them all? I mean, are you hearing from families or that you need to offer, for instance, for the capstone? We want the capstone, and you're feeling a little squeezed on being able to offer that. So just kind of an overall on what you think about the menu and whether it's been positive or negative for you.
From a rural viewpoint, I think the menu has a lot of things on it that most of our kids can meet easily. I think there's a lot of things that our upper-end kids will meet without any problem.
Mm-hmm.
The kids that I'm worried about are the kids that aren't ESL or IEP students and they're below that midline, we're going to have to really work to get them to that point. We do have the ACT Word Keys program available on our menu, and the ASVAB score. So as we get closer to having our freshmen have to meet these guidelines, we'll really be pushing that for those students.
We saw the multiple options actually as a positive. We wanted to provide as many different venues and opportunities for students to be able to demonstrate readiness. We also are, Inglewood is also a very small school district. We have less than 3,000 students. And we, as a school district, are not able to offer all of those options. Like, for example, we do not have an IB program. But the way we worded it in our policy was that we would, if a student were to transfer, because we do have a high transfer rate, if a student were to transfer into us, that we would honor a student that would transfer into us with that. So we adopted everything because we wanted to have as many options as possible. So we saw that as actually as a positive. It didn't seem overwhelming or intimidating.
I like the choice. I think that's really powerful for districts to choose what they want to do with their kids. It gives the kids an opportunity to take several different tracks if they want. If they want to take an AP track, they can do that. If they want to take a concurrent enrollment track, if they want to take a like a associate applied science track, it gives them flexibility to kind of become what they are wanting to be. I think what we need to do is, education is about educating students. It's not about them conforming to what we want to teach them. We need to be market-driven, and we need to be fulfilling the needs of these kids as they're getting out of high school and college for a job. And so the jobs are, they're just really changing. We are looking at doing cybersecurity, for example. We're trying to connect with those people in Colorado Springs, and we're looking to see what kind of opportunity those get our kids. So that needs a flexible way of measuring how we are sending the kids out. So this is a really good menu. I like it a lot. It's it gives us a lot of choices, and I think it gives us a chance to demonstrate that the kids can do things that we weren't able to say that we were giving them credit for before. So I think it's something that we can find, that we can motivate our students a lot better with this menu. So I like it a lot.
Thank you.
Board Member McCullough. Thank you, all of you, for being here. It's really exciting to hear about the success stories that you're having. In particular, Senator King, I was excited to hear about the opportunities going forward in the middle of Congressional District 6 at 6th Avenue and I-25. Yeah. That's right where we want to be offering that encouragement for children who might be first-generation college students. So that's, and hearing that they're graduating in some cases with 47 credit hours, that's fantastic, particularly given the rising cost of college. It can make that four-year degree feel like it's out of reach. I hope this isn't too much of an indulgence, but I wanted to share something that I hope students are hearing about when they're in the concurrent enrollment classes, and that is that one thing we learned with several college recruiters and with a couple of pre-med advisors that my daughter talked with recently in 2016, and that is that it's not a choice at some campuses whether or not you transfer over those concurrent grades. You have to, for some campuses, you must transfer them over, which means we have to have that mature conversation and warning to sometimes 15, 16, 17-year-olds that the work you're being graded on now may be a part of the picture when you're applying to law school or medical school. And so it's a fantastic opportunity, but also a really serious warning that you can't just not transfer those grades over. You're live for grad school application records. So I'm just hoping that wherever you touch folks who are offering concurrent enrollment, that word of warning is going out as well, because one thing we learned from recruiters is that there are lots of students who are coming in with C's and B's because of the maturity issue, and or because maybe they're just emerging students. They're coming into their own but not quite there yet. And so for some, depending on what they think they might want to do after undergrad, that can be relevant. So just a little bit of
a little bit of input from a parent. And thank you for the work that you're doing. It's very exciting.
Could I respond to that?
Please.
I think all these courses should be transferable. These should not be, these are not high school courses. These are taught by adjunct professors. They're all in the catalog of the community colleges or the four-year institutions. And they're GT pathway courses, so they are really something that they can do and use. So I think they're very, very beneficial, and I think that they get an opportunity to get those kind of things done. So I think the opportunity to save the money and everything is very prevalent with us, so I think it's good.
Board Member Rankin.
Good morning. I, too, thank you for being here today, taking the time and sharing what you do at your schools. I'm just curious about how you use the menu and who helps decide what things you offer. I know if you don't have IB, you can't have that on it, but do you just offer the whole menu to all the students and they get to choose and they can change as they go through high school? If you could just speak to that at your school and each one of you, I'd appreciate it.
In Holyoke, it started as a staff conversation and recommendation to our District Accountability Committee. District Accountability Committee talked some more about it, made a recommendation to the Board of Education. Board of Education then adopted, and they adopted the staff recommendation.
And what was that? Was it the whole menu?
No, it's not. It doesn't include the capstone. We don't have IB classes. We only have AP classes in English, composition, and literature. So those are our only limitations.
And the SAT,
yes.
You just hit the floor of that like we had put forth?
We added the new recommended score this past summer. So we changed it from what it was with the old SAT test. And now we're up to date with the new SAT test that started last spring.
And they have to accomplish
yes. The
970 combined score?
Yeah. It's split out into the English and math score. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So are you referring to the menu as we adopted it as a policy, or are you referring to how we're using it with students?
What you adopted, unless you just adopted the whole menu.
We adopted the whole menu.
Okay.
We're basically using concurrent enrollment. We use that a lot. The acupuncture, obviously, we use because every student comes in and does that. We are really orientating ourselves toward college courses, so we don't do all of these. But I think as we go forward, we're starting to work with the CareerWise. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They're starting to work with apprenticeships and internships. And we are doing that with three of our schools, and the only one we're not actively doing that is Colorado Springs, and we are getting going there, and we're going to do that. And so I think that's a really important plus because we are trying to connect jobs to kids, and I think that VATTEM have some experience in those workforce areas. So anything that's related to a job area, the competencies that they need for being successful in a job, we would allow them to emphasize this. We're an open-minded kind of organization. So give us any proof that you can be successful. And these are menus that we will use, but we like the demonstration that they do as far as their completing their graduation requirements and how they go about doing their education. So,
Senator King, I just have a little follow-up. I like your idea of market-driven. And what's market-driven for your students today may be different 4 years from now.
Absolutely.
The flexibility, how do you account for that in your school?
Well, Jennifer Doherty is our head of school in Colorado Springs. She's sitting right behind me. So what she did was she went to the workforce readiness place in Colorado Springs, and she did, where are the jobs in Colorado Springs? And cyber security is a big job, medical is a big job, and so is the trades like the wood construction, those types of things. So what we're doing is we're trying to focus on those areas that have opportunities inside Colorado Springs, and we'll give them an opportunity to have a contact with those people. So we have the National Cybersecurity Convention, I guess you call it, is at the Broadmoor in a couple of weeks. And we're having these kids, we're going to expose them to that, and we're going to try and see who wants to go to that and get an opportunity to see how they would fit into that. We're talking to CTU about a degree that would continue with a four-year degree. We're talking about Pike Speak. We're going to be talking about them with their cybersecurity. So We're just trying to connect the opportunities for these kids to have multiple types of opportunities to go and see their careers, and just not, they're doing very good in completing high school, they're doing good in their college courses, now we just need to connect the careers to them and give them that opportunity for that.
Thank you very much.
Board Member Flores.
Thank you. I was just wondering, Dr. Odner?
Oh, no, doctor.
Oh, Ms. Odner and...
microphone.
And Ms. Sackham, I think both of you are, I mean, given the big support that you're giving STEM, and given the big support that you're giving just the arts and in general, I just think writing is so important. And I don't know. I mean, a capstone would seem to be, or a mini capstone would be kind of exciting, I think, for your students, especially you have, let's see, you said you had advanced kids that were taking advanced courses, and I think the outcome for something like that would be a paper that they would write just naturally. Wouldn't that be kind of an easy thing? That, and it would be so important. I know that that's something that in my high school we did for those courses, because it was kind of bringing all that together in an area that you were interested in. And certainly English and history was something that was very interesting to me in high school, and it kind of continued. And a paper kind of bringing all that together would be something that, I'm just thinking of the extra work that you're saying it would put on your, I'm trying to understand the extra work, and it is extra work, but how it just, is a corollary and an end result to what all the work that your teachers and your students are doing. The same for you. And probably in some cases for early college, Colorado Early College as well. Could you speak to this?
We adopted the capstone. And we are in the throes of trying to figure out what that means.
Uh-huh.
Because the capstone can look so many different ways.
Yeah.
It could be a four-year culminating project.
Mm-hmm.
It could be an end-of-course project.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a senior year project.
Right.
It looks, if you look at what's happening across the state, capstone really looks so many different ways depending on where you go. And really across the country, it looks so many different ways.
Right.
So that is what we are navigating right now. Our board said, yes, we like the idea of capstone, and now our charge as a district in building leaders and teachers is trying to figure out what does that mean for our schools. And we haven't figured that out yet, because similar to Holyoke, we have limited staff members, limited staffing, and so we're trying to figure out how do we create a meaningful culminating experience for students that honors their passion and can capture that element of demonstrating proficiency and mastery with the resources that we have available for us.
Right.
We will figure it out.
Okay, so you're thinking of it as a thesis, possibly.
Or a project, it could be many different things.
Right. But I think it would be so helpful to get that in high school for college and for careers as well, I think. Because people have to, they're project managers and they have to come up with a final report and all the findings and such. So I just think that it's just a natural next step. And but I'm glad that you're thinking of the various ways in which that could be done. And in your case, I think it's just kids would want to do that.
So in Holyoke, it's something that we're very interested in. It's something that we don't want to include in the menu until we have a plan.
Sure. Okay.
And it's going to take some time to develop that. Our students that are in career and tech ed organizations frequently qualify to go to national meetings with projects that they've worked on all year long.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yes.
But putting it in place.
Okay. Yeah. So you're thinking about it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Now, just quickly respond. We concentrate on three things when they come into the school: reading, writing, and math. Mm-hmm. If they can't do that, they're not going to be successful in college. And it's really, that's basic thinking, but that's the honest truth. So we really work hard on that, and everything becomes secondary to that issue. So we have a lot of writing that the kids do. We have a lot of work on the types of things that would be help them to be successful in essays and that type of stuff at the college level. So we are doing that a lot, and we're getting really good results. We have to do a writing sample when they come in, and they do that too. So we're really working hard to make sure that they're ready for college by what we're doing on those types of tests.
Very good. Thank you. Board Member Durham, do you have any questions, comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the testimony has been helpful in giving us some confidence in the menu that we have, and that it seems to be serving a variety of districts and circumstances reasonably well. Senator King, just one question. You serve a fairly disadvantaged population, and I presume a lot of those students require remediation before they are ready for the college courses, and that you do that remediation. Does that create sometimes an inordinate or significant number of graduates who take 5 years to graduate as opposed to four? And is the four versus five causing you any kind of trouble that you're aware from a regulatory standpoint?
Okay. Well, thank you for that question. In Aurora, for example, we have our population is probably as high as the Aurora population, a 90% minority. We have probably the free and reduced lunches comparable to what we did. We went and wanted to go into that market because we have proven that this works, this model works for kids that are from homes that are thinking about college, but we wanted to go into an area where they weren't thinking about college. So it was a challenge for us to go in there, and it's been really a difficult challenge for us. In fact, I'm over there today, unfortunately, doing three expulsions for guns and for things that we are not going to tolerate in a school. We are going to be very strict about what we do. And I think the culture is a little bit different in Aurora than it is other schools because they're used to kind of doing what they want to do, and they kind of are on their own path. And we are trying to give them a trajectory for a disciplined path to an opportunity for an associate's degree. And so it's a really new challenge for us, and we're up to it. We're having fun with it, and we have 250 kids that we started with there, and I went around the first day, and I said, you are going to make a difference because you have chosen to come into a school that you are going to have to really work hard to make to get to what you want to do, is get an associate's degree, and you are stepping up in an area that people don't care too much about education. And so I think we are doing a great job with them. We are, we'll see. It's going to take a lot of these kids. They came in, our average student came in at 030. And 030 is like fifth and sixth grade level of achievement. We're four and five grade levels below where we need to have these kids. And so we are working very hard to move them up multiple grades in a year. And we are trying to get them to college courses as quick as we can. But it was a challenge, and it's something we have a really good tutoring program. We have a lot of individualized things we do with the kids. And we are really concentrating on Aurora being a success story. So we need 5 years for some of these kids because they're coming in two or three grade levels below. And, I mean, I don't know how you necessarily get that done if you don't have some extra time with kids. And we are bringing in, we're an open enrollment school, so we don't refuse anybody. You know, a lot of high schools, they have a continuation of kids that go through their core. We accept all kids, and we accept juniors, seniors, and sophomores. And those kids sometimes need an extra year because of the fact that they are not able to come to us, say, even as a junior, and be anywhere close to college ready. So we work really hard with them, and we do a lot of work with them, but it's a challenge, and I think we're going to be successful. We'll find out how the year goes. we'll see how it plays out. But it's definitely a different culture in Aurora than it is any of our other schools. But I'm thrilled that we're doing it there. And I want to make a statement that kids at all, we say all students can succeed, and I don't care what their nationality is. I don't care why they come into our school. We accept all kids. We have a lot of special education kids in Aurora. And we're taking all kinds of needs of kids. So we're excited about what we're doing there, and it's a really fun challenge for us to go there. So it'll be interesting to see how it turns out. So.
Thank you, Senator King. And
it's my turn.
Appreciate the effort you've made on behalf of Colorado students and the innovations that you've brought to Colorado, and I think have forced on a marketplace basis a lot of schools to adapt to the model that you have created. So thank you.
Thank you.
So welcome, and thank you for coming. I have a couple I would call maybe mechanical questions around graduation requirements. In order to be a full-time student and get the PPOR, you got to be there. So what is in your system? I believe you spoke to that, Ms. Ockham, because you said that there were a number of hours that were a part of your graduation requirements. But if Senator Ms. Orchard would talk to that, because I've been wondering about that, I'm worried about possibly having graduation requirements that doesn't actually require kids to be in school. Therefore, we have a whole different financial system for our schools. Ms. Ortner, do you want to address that, please?
So our graduation requirements include 56 credits.
Okay.
Students can earn 2 credits per class over the course of a year. So, and I outlined 4 years of English, 3 then of math, science, and social studies.
I may have missed
plus
that.
The others. I didn't say 56.
Okay. Senator? Same thing. Do you have an attendance?
Well, we kind of do 2 things in 2 different ways, because the college courses count differently for attendance than what the courses do for the because if you get 7 to 10 credit hours, you're considered a full-time student. Well, on count day, the professors take attendance, and we make sure that they're all attending and they're going to their classes. And we also do a regular hour schedule with our college prep program, so we have kind of a hybrid situation, but they are definitely doing the time in the class, and they're not doing the traditional schedule with the college students, because they're on the college campuses and they're fulfilling those requirements for those college courses. But we hold them accountable. If they fail their courses, we make them work it out or pay for it, and we make them they come and they understand that they can do it. But they have to give the attitude to do it. So I think that's something that we do. So we're definitely requiring attendance. Okay.
So in trying to understand what this looks like, there is still a requirement to go to school and to go to class. But how you fulfill the expectation is no longer based on having a passing grade in certain courses, but it is in fulfilling the expectations on whichever parts of the menu that you adopt. Am I close on that? Because I've been trying to get the picture. When I talk to people about this, they say, well, don't they have to go to school? Can they just come and take a test, and that's all they need to graduate? And I think that piece, because that's at the district decision level, is not something that folks are aware of, that you still are expected to go, in your situation, take particular subjects, maybe not in all the other courses. Sometimes it's internships that give you hours. I'm not really sure. It'll be interesting, I think, for us to look at the differences when we finally get the graduation requirements for each of the districts. But there is that attendance requirement that fulfills the funding piece of K-12 ed. Would you agree?
Our students will have to meet our graduation requirements as well as the criteria in the menu.
Okay, so, and that is in hours. And then the other question that I have is, will it show up on the student's transcript which criteria was used to fulfill the graduation requirements? Will a college see that a student, be able to note that a student did a capstone project, had a certain score, whatever the criteria is that was met?
That's actually something we're talking about in that Front Range group right now.
Oh, good.
So far the conversation has been a yes/no. met the proficiencies yes/no, but now we're starting to dig deeper. Do we want to denote how was it met? Was it met via SAT? Was it met via concurrent enrollment? Was it and part of that is conversations with our post-secondary partners. What would
Good.
They want to
That's
see?
That's been my biggest worry is that I haven't physically seen or heard a lot of input from them about how this is moving forward. Not only in-state, but also out-of-state.
Right.
Senator. You get two transcripts. So you get the college transcript, and they also get the high school transcript. So they have high school graduations. We're much like, they would have to do both our regular graduation requirements, and they have the opportunity to get the associate's degree. So they are, they have to attend these courses, or they're not going to pass them. I mean, it's a pretty simple thing. Of at the college level, you got to show up and do your work, and it's we treat them like college kids. They show that they are able to do that, and we let them go about doing it. But they are getting transcripts, and we're putting those things on their transcripts. When Pike Speak issues a transcript or whoever issues it, that's a college transferable, a college credit. So it's good for a college degree.
Okay, great. Did you have something you wanted to add to that?
I just wanted to add, Madam Chair, that so staff have been meeting with the Department of Higher Education and also all the admissions directors from the 4 and 2 year colleges across Colorado. Certainly we can extend potentially beyond some of that, but they're very interested in knowing how students, criteria they met on the menu.
Okay. So we're going to go around again. Board Member Flores?
I just have a short question, and that is I have a mentee who is working on policy, and right now he works for Diana DeGette. Mm-hmm. He's and one of the things that he was given responsibility for was to look at applicants who were going into the military academies. Mm-hmm. And he had a big problem going into high schools to talk about applying for those military. So I mean, this used to be something in the 60s that I know, you know, that kind of happened, but I thought that that had been sort of dissipated and was not done anymore. So do you allow people
Absolutely. We
like
allow
this
recruiters.
To come in and
we
talk?
We allow recruiters into our building, and we hope that the kids sign up for this.
Right.
We've had some tremendous success stories of kids right. in the military.
Do you find that that's still an issue in maybe not your high school, but other schools?
Well, I don't know about other schools.
Other districts.
I think it depends on their attitude. I mean, we are mm-hmm. that's a great job for a lot of kids.
Sure.
And it's a great place for them to learn things. And
right.
we had Irvin Wallace come back. He graduated 4 years ago. He was in culinary arts at Pikes Peak Community College. And he's now becoming a sergeant in the Army. And he's now serving the generals at the Pentagon.
Awesome.
So that's a success story that we have because we encourage them to
Absolutely.
Do it. He won 3 culinary arts competitions
yeah.
in the military with I looked at the menu. That was fit for the Broadmoor. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was
right.
And he won these contests. And that's the kind of kids that we get going into the military. So there's nothing wrong with the military. That's a great
yeah.
job. And
yeah.
he's going to make a career out of it. And he's going to be a lifetime cook for, now we're going to the Pentagon, in just 4 years that he's been in the military. So
that's wonderful.
There's a lot of success stories with kids in the military.
Thank you.
I wear my Air Force parent.
My
son's a captain in the Air Force.
That's wonderful.
Cool.
Yeah. Board Member Goff.
Ooh, this is so tempting to just get it off on that topic. Have fun the rest of the day. Maybe in connection with Val's question or comment, toward the end of my life in the high school classroom, that's when I believe there was a bit of a kerfluffle around bringing in military recruiters and people to talk to students. I don't want to say it incorrectly. I think the timing was somehow connected to the U.S.'s involvement in the Middle East. Ramping up, and there was There was just some worry on the part of parents and others about whatever. But at the time, when I was teaching, I had an opportunity to administer the ASVAB test, and I learned an awful lot at that point about the caliber and the expectations and how kids had the chance then to learn how the military experience and their high school life and other studies just were so integrated into so many things. Very valuable. Yeah. In the years since, I have several nieces and nephews, but the oldest of my nieces is a former F-18 pilot who was fortunate to become involved with ROTC in high school, but then received a scholarship that carried her all the way through the University of Colorado and her commission years and everything like that. And I used to tell my own students before she had her experience, but afterwards, how it is such an overlooked and underrated avenue for kids, not only for higher ed, but also for job prospects and placements and potentials. So I'm totally appreciative of that, and I would like to see adequate and appropriate and enough emphasis on all kinds of strands of opportunity for these kids, and that is certainly one of them, the military advantage that a lot of kids may not have. At the same time, those students are not qualifying up to the par they should be. And part of what we're finding out is that the academic preparation and in some cases the physical qualifications are still falling short. So it's like we've got a multi-pronged effort to pay attention to here about that. But the potential is incredible. Kids want to, if they have adults, all of us, who support their interest in fostering their interest. I would just really a quick mechanical question sort of too. On your full menu option list, how do you, I guess it goes back to my communication with parents and the kids. How do you explain to them what they need to have? What does that mean? If you've got this full menu, and yeah, every single one of these is terrific, and so you have 10, 15 choices, and here's the full menu, then what? combined with a certain number of credit coursework, what does it take what becomes of this menu? I guess that goes back to my longtime question. I'm sorry for putting this board through it again. I've been uneasy all along. Today makes me feel a lot better because I hear how you're applying it. Unease in that only one choice of the English and one choice of the math, if I'm hearing it right, constitutes satisfaction of the menu. How does that work? Because if a kid has a student has a capstone project under their belt, and they acquired an industry certificate, and they have they passed a score on SAT or ASVAB or whichever one of these they're involved with, which one carries more weight in the eyes and ears of our communities about what it takes to graduate from high school, meaning get a diploma?
Well, if you want me to start with that, I will say that what carries the most weight in our school is associate's degree. And I think that carries a lot of weight because the kids are coming out with that, and that's a 2 years ahead type of program. So that's the concurrent enrollment is really, really huge. I think that's a demonstration that they can do the work.
That they're ready.
These kids have proven time and time again that they can do college work in high school, and they're very successful at it. And so I think that is really a key component of the success that we demonstrate, that they do the college work and they get that done. I think that the other thing that they have is an ability to look at their opportunities as far as jobs and careers go, and they drive their own career. And they have that is something that is really meaningful to kids. I mean, we have kids that are going to be doctors. We have kids at Harvard creating nanotubes to do away with silicone and chips. We have kids doing, we have the highest scoring girl probably in the state of Colorado with 120 college credit hours, went to the Wharton School of Business, the number one business school in the nation. So we have these kids accomplishing just phenomenal things. And so it's a, they drive it though. They're involved with it. Their ICAP is their choice. And so we had I'll just tell you quickly about another girl, Michaela, who was in one of our courses, and she went into the UCCS. She got her four-year degree, and she was a victim advocate for some of the troops and the people on the Navy bases, and she's now working on toward a law degree. So, I mean, these kids do things that they just have choices that they make, and they make their own choices, and they go where they want to go, and they accomplish great things. So it's just a fun thing to watch them and see what they do.
And I would piggyback on that. I mean, I would think we don't want to put a weight or a value on the menu for the students, because we want it to be driven by the student and their passion. So if their passion is based in an industry certificate, we want to put all of our support on that for them. You know, I think that ICAP process and the supports we put in place for them to explore and investigate who they are and what they're passionate about, and then support them in taking the courses that align with their passions. That's how we navigate that menu, that we use the menu to support their passions and their interests. And the menu is relatively flexible, right? I mean, AP could support it, and concurrent enrollment could support it. And concurrent enrollment and CTE are so aligned right now that there's a lot of overlap in a lot of this menu. So we want to be able to use that menu to help students navigate their passions for their own future.
Thank you. That's heartening, and it's encouraging, and that kids and families are starting to see how it all blends and supports each other, everything. One of you mentioned that ICAP was actually a requirement, a graduation requirement. Mm-hmm.
It is.
So
yeah. All of us.
For all of us. So completing it and following through at the various stages is also, as you graduate, then we want to have a record that this has been done as well. So is that accurate for that?
So our students in ICAP are working with that menu from the time they enter high school. Mm-hmm. But it's in our student handbook, which they get in seventh grade. It's part of the process throughout their time in our school. So it's not something we spring on them as they're juniors or some such thing. Yeah. Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
thank you.
One of the things we do, really work very hard with our advisors on how they work with our students. It's one-on-one. It's the parents coming in with the kids. It's meeting with them and saying, where are you wanting to go? How are you wanting to get there? Are you on target to get there? Are you doing the courses that are going to help you get there? They keep up trying to push down the number of kids that they serve, because they serve them so well. I think we're down to about 150. You know, the kids that our advisors serve, and they work with these kids, and they get to know these people. I mean, this is a one-to-one relationship that we do with this. This is a very, very important part of our program, to make sure that we're listening to them and helping them get to accomplish what they want to get accomplished. So I think that the advising is just critical for a successful ICAP and how they go forward with what they're wanting to do, and we spend a tremendous amount of time on that.
Board Member Jarrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator King, do you know off the top of your head what your per pupil expenditure is per student?
Well, this varies from Aurora's about 7,800 to about 7,200 in Fort Collins and Colorado Springs.
So I think the average in the state is what, $10,000 or $11,000. So you're accomplishing this for what would be considered a bargain for the taxpayers?
Well, you know, I think that we don't have any opportunity. We're a CSI school, so we have no opportunity for a mill levy in our schools, and that was a bill that was just going through last year, and it was trying to help us. We get some facility funding, about $200 a student, but we are delivering college degrees with $7,500 basically per student, and we get some grants for different things. We got some grants this year, and we work very hard on that. So I think we're a tremendous bargain for kids because we are saving the parents of these kids. The debt is just killing this middle class in this country. The college debt, it's the number one debt now.
It is.
And then we got to get rid of that, especially for these kids that are come from low-income areas. We have to make sure that they can go and get those degrees and get them paid for. So I think it's a tremendous value for what we're doing for the kids.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? So thank you so much for coming. I do have one more question. I'd be grateful for your comments, and that is there's been a recommendation that we include the successful completion of the GED or any high school equivalency assessment in the in the graduation options. I'd appreciate your comments.
I have really mixed feelings about that. And I spoke earlier about being worried about our low-end kids that are our IEP or ESL students for that very reason. I'm afraid that they will take that as an out and leave us.
Leave you without staying and fulfilling your classroom expectations?
Yes, and then go try to get that GED. They have to do that on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the students that would fit that criteria in Holyoke probably would not complete for quite some time.
So I'm a little confused, just because I thought I understood that in addition to an item on the menu, that you also, your graduation requirement included
56 credits.
So
I'm afraid that those low-end students will take that GED as a way to get out of the 56 credits.
But I thought they couldn't. I thought that was.
You'd have to include it.
Well,
you'd have to include it.
No, they would leave us and then go get their GED.
But then they would not, it would still be the same GED that we have today, which is which means they're not a graduate of Holyoke.
Yeah.
They just got the GED or the high school equivalency, which is the risk that you, I believe you have today.
Yeah.
And by putting it on the menu, I'm trying to put words in your mouth and I shouldn't. Mm. By putting it in the menu, it makes you uncomfortable that that might.
It does.
Thank you.
I think we'll have more take that option, and I don't want them to do that.
Thank you.
I support that decision. Inglewood has an alternative high school right now, and we support multiple pathways to a high school diploma. And we value high school equivalency, so we would be in support of that.
Okay. I would support it based on the condition that we establish the cut points at the right place. I think that's really critical. I think these cut points are too low on AccuPlace here, for example. I think we need higher cut points, and I think the expectation should be if you take out an assessment, and it's a valid assessment, and it shows you're ready to go on to college and you're able to accomplish college work, let them take that assessment. I have no problem with that. I want to see as many kids go forward as we can. It will not lower our standard at all to do this. It would, if it happened, it would. Well, our standard is an associate's degree. We have kids that we're trying. They're coming to our school and they're accomplishing a lot more. They're not looking for the bottom. They're looking for the top. And so I think it's the focus of the school, and if that assessment gives them opportunity, let's create opportunities for them. Let's create a chance for them to have a job. And maybe it would be like, I've got to tell you one more story about Michael, who was just came back and we talked to him. He only accomplished one college course in our school, and he went to work for SEMA, the people that are, you see them on the freeways all the time? Yeah. He went to work there as a laborer, but he learned how to give a job his all. And we taught him that at our school. So in 3 years, he's now the foreman of the crew that finishes these bridges. He's done 13 of them around the state of Colorado. And he credits his discipline that he had that they learned at our school to the fact that he was able to go up and do what he's done. And so he's just that's just an example of the kind of kids that what they see is an opportunity. When he finishes the interview, he says, "Mr. King, I'm just about at a six-figure the salary, so this is huge, and these kids are just doing great things, and they are accomplishing things that because we gave them multiple options, we gave them opportunities to accomplish things. So if that's a hot button for some kids, let's make the high enough and make it rigorous enough. Let's give them opportunities.
So, Senator, clarify for me, please. When we've discussed the menu, we have said that we've set the floor, and we assume that districts would be setting higher standards. So for the items that you accepted on your graduation guidelines, did you raise the level?
I not only raised it there, I raised it in the Senate Bill 272 that I wrote for the school performance framework.
Right.
We said that those kids have to be college ready for that measurement to happen on the AccuPlacer. So that's a score.
That's higher than what's in the menu.
20 points higher than this score. And it's a higher score, and it's a lot more rigorous, and it's good enough to get them into college courses at 121 levels. And that's rigorous type of English and math. It's not – that's college algebra. So we're not – we don't shoot for the bottom. We shoot for the top, and we let the kids show us and demonstrate it to us. I'll just say one thing. We don't really focus on the state assessment. We focus on the kids doing what they need to do to be successful in their career or their work that they're doing. And this assessment that comes by as a byproduct. These kids are doing well on the assessments. I mean, we have stories like high school achievement and reading, and some of our schools are 97%. The writing and math is in the 80s and for some of these schools. But we have overall school scores. I just would like to talk a little about this because it's really powerful. Almost 90. We're in the 90s on a lot of these schools and campuses we're on. We were doing things that, and we don't care. We don't care about the test. We care about them getting something that's meaningful in the college courses.
Good. Agree with that. Yeah. So let me go back, if I may, to what's on the transcript. Because there, I have district constituents who are concerned about comparison between districts, where some districts set, as you did, to set a higher level for the items on the menu, and some have left it at the what we would call the basement. Should that be on the transcript? In other words, if I look at a student's transcript, do I know how prepared they really are? It's not a new issue, because back when I looked at A, B's, and C's, it certainly depended not only on the school district, it depended on the school, and it depended on the teacher. So we're still in that same position. But do you have any suggestions on how to allow for some comparability between graduates from different districts based on the graduation requirements that they chose?
Well, as I think about the different components of the menu, like I'm thinking about AP, like an AP score. So if a district kept the menu as written, which is a score of a 2, so a student may have met it as a score of a 2, but the student still carries that AP score. So a student, even though a district may have changed the floor of that score, the student's score would still be a 3 or a 4 or 5. Like I'm saying, like the student's score still goes with
it. It still goes with the transcript, and so that shows.
So the concurrent enrollment grade would still go with the student. So
it's more about setting higher scores, you basically are incentivizing your students to reach higher.
I haven't given much thought to your question, but I was just thinking more in terms of like the different menu items for individual students. They have an individual score in terms of concurrent enrollment or AP or an IB score. They're still walking with an individual score that would be reflected either in a transcript or a score report or something that is a level playing field in comparison to other students.
Are transcripts common? Is there a statewide transcript? I think maybe
there is not.
There is not, so districts do their own anyway.
Well, there's a standard for the concurrent enrollment standard, because if you get an English 121 on your transcript from Pikes Peak Community College, for example, you have proven that you are college ready in that assessment, because it's a GT pathway course, and that course is common to all public.
So in higher ed, there's a commonality,
right.
not by school districts,
no.
Necessarily.
No. But concurrent enrollment, there is.
So by concurrent enrollment, there is.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. If you have any final thought you want to share with us, that you want us to know, that you haven't already shared with us,
it's been grateful. Thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to you. We are
Thank you for coming very much.
Excited what we're doing with kids, and we're excited about them reaching for higher things than they've ever reached for. And they, we've had several kids graduate with bachelor's degrees, and we have a electrical engineer that's in Colorado Springs, Jenna Rock, who graduated. She came in developmental math, and she was determined to get a bachelor's degree, and she's now working with my son, actually, at RT Logic. He's an engineer there, and he's she's doing a fantastic job. Kids can accomplish more than we expect.
Yes, totally.
And we
agree.
Do not have a rigorous enough academic rigor in our schools today. They're a lot more intelligent than we think they are, and they can accomplish a lot more than we ask of them. We just don't ask. Mm-hmm. But they step up if they have the opportunity, and they do great things. So thank you very much.
Thanks for what you
thank
all
you.
Do very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yay.
Thank you.
So I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, we didn't really orient you to your decision today. We wanted to start with the panel. So do you want Misty to go through the rest of the presentation?
Okay. All right.
Just to help you understand what you need to decide on today.
We did it last time, but let's repeat it.
If you just like a quick refresher, I can take 5 minutes.
Well, I think so, but if you want to go through the whole parts.
I like 5 minutes.
Sure.
Like or
quick
sure.
refresher. Quick refresher, please.
Quick refresher.
Okay. To you, Madam Chair, would you like the panelists to stay?
Oh, you're more than welcome to stay if you want to watch us slog through this.
But feel free to leave it.
But it is 12:04, so
you can go to lunch.
Should your stomach be telling you something else, please feel free.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. So I will then dive into the conversation, some of which you asked about in September, or all of which we asked about in September as well. So please, panelists, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks
so
for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Could you remind me what page you were on up there?
Sure. I am on slide 4.
Thank you.
And this is just a reminder in the conversation because it came up last time, why the name guidelines, right? And so this is statutory. As you heard from the local school districts, that they are certainly requirements once they are turned over into the district's hands. So, and statute does reflect that. Just I want to briefly read you one sentence, that the requirement is a comprehensive set of guidelines for the establishment of high school graduation requirements to be used by each school district of education in developing graduation requirements. So again, you all set guidelines, the local boards of education set requirements based on the menu you establish, and it is, the statute goes on to say, that they must meet or exceed. So I just know that that was a conversation last time and wanted to make sure that was clarified. So the other piece is just to remind you, go back one, in addition to the menu of options, the alignment with description of post-secondary and workforce readiness is required, ensuring that there are options in English, at least one option in English and one option in math that is met, and that there are multiple pathways available for students, as you heard the panel say. This also requires alignment with, graduation guidelines require alignment with Colorado Academic Standards, the Individual Career and Academic Plan, or ICAP, and the Essential Skills, or the Former 21st Century Skills. So I want to just make sure and reinforce that, because this also requires ICAP, mm-hmm. as you heard from these folks, right? One of the things that came up in our conversation last month is alignment with higher education remedial policy. I think it's probably of interest to this group that what you see in front of you is the remedial chart that colleges in our state use, so public colleges in our state use, to say, is a student ready to enter a 100-level credit-bearing course or not? And the only, for example, ACT's at the top, you'll see there's direct alignment between 18 English cut score, graduation guideline, 18 in English. So it's the same because we're required to align with not in need of remediation. The option that we'll be talking about today is SAT, the new SAT that was started in 16, so last year,
that higher education has already adopted the aligned scores. You'll see direct alignment between the old 430 and the new 470 for English. The old test 460 and the new test is 500. So those are the same score, and higher education has adopted those as well. And then you'll see certainly the high school equivalency exams that and the scores that are not in need of remediation that higher education institutions are currently using across our state. So this, I know, is a lot on one chart, and I will just briefly walk you through it, but it is information that you requested. So specifically, you requested how many students are passing the cut scores for English and math on SAT. In addition to SAT, we looked at all the other options to say how many students currently are participating in these different pathways, and then how many of them are meeting the expectation that's been established. So if you take AP, for example, advanced placement, so the readiness step is set as a 2. And about 55% of students are participating, and I apologize, that's also 55% of students taking the AP exam are getting a 2 or above. Does that make sense? I think that was a little confusing.
Getting a 2 or
so
above.
Getting a 2 or above.
So they're supposed to be 55 in both of those?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And then 45 in both. So ASVAB might be another example that this is a little bit different in that it's a percentile. So 31%.
Where are you?
Sorry, so ASVAB, the score is 31.
Under advanced placement.
Armed Services Got it. Vocational.
Sorry, at Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Test.
I found it.
And that currently 10% of students are taking ASVAB,
okay.
If that makes sense.
It's not 10% are passing.
Correct.
No, 69% are passing.
Exactly.
Of the
10%. Does that, am I making sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do have a question, though.
You said that 55 should be in the percent meet in advanced placement. That seems so 100% of the folks participating are also
meeting.
I have a feeling that's a different
number.
No, I
think those are flipped. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. We'll
so
go
we'd
back
have
and get
to,
you an update.
We'd have
I
to
apologize.
Get clarity on that for you. Just
which category?
AP.
AP. We have a missing. Yeah, we have a couple missing things there. And so
I think what happened actually is the participation number should be in the meets number, and then the participation number is missing. So I apologize for that.
Yeah.
So let me pick one more that's a little cleaner just to try to not confuse you all. So you did ask specifically about SAT. There's 93% participation in SAT across our state. Currently, 65% of all students of the 93% that are taking SAT are meeting the 470 in English. And so that is the new SAT, right? So that is one of the technical amendments recommendations from the work group. So again, in math, it's 53% are meeting 500. Okay. So here's the information that you'd asked for last.
Thank you.
You'd also asked for local school district policies, and this also came up with the panel. We looked at 56 school districts, 37 of them were rural. So as you heard today, the folks are trying to adopt as much of the menu as they possibly can. 27 of the 56 districts that we took a look at had adopted the entire menu, and then 29 had adopted a subset of the menu. So the primary things that are not being adopted are things that folks may not be able to offer, as you heard today, such as IB, or they may not offer AP courses, or they may not have put capstone on
capstone.
The menu yet.
Yeah.
So, and then Holyoke and Durango are the two that we found out of the 56 that have set exceed. Okay. So here's the technical considerations. These are the items that you have seen before. So the three items in front of you today for your consideration, if you choose to vote. One, the removal of ACT Compass, because this was discontinued by ACT and is no longer available. AccuPlacer the addition of sentence skills, because this is reflective also of higher education, so I'll go through that in a little more detail, and then updating the SAT scores from the old test to the new test. So these are the three options and where they fall on the menu that you have in front of you. And ACT Compass is pretty straightforward, right? The test no longer exists. AccuPlacer, it would be the addition of sentence skills as an option with English on the menu. So keep in mind that colleges right now offer students the opportunity to show that they're ready, not in remediation, in reading comprehension or sentence skills, and that these scores, as Senator King has mentioned, they are aligned with the applied associates entry requirements. And then SAT in front of you. So again, as you saw from the not in need of remediation chart from higher education, these are the same scores. It is a different test, and it is directly aligned between the old scores and the new scores. The test changed, which is what changed the scores. Okay, so with that, Madam Chair, would you all like to consider?
Well,
Board
Member Goff?
Yes. Back to page 8 for the, that far back? Am I looking at the page where the local school district, page 8. 56 is what the top adds up to, the top section, 56 districts. We have 178 districts. Where are the rest? I mean, what's the status? And maybe that's why I was curious earlier about a target date to have this.
I mean, sure. So
where are they all?
Absolutely. So this is a sample of districts that we had an opportunity. So we didn't have time because we don't have authority to collect graduation requirements. And so we went to everybody's website or asked folks, what are your graduation requirements? And that took some time, and so we haven't had a chance to check with all 178.
Is there a requirement that it's on the website for each district?
Yeah.
It is. But some of them we have a harder time finding than others. So.
Yeah, I've looked at some of the websites. It's a mystery.
Board Member Flores.
Yeah.
do you foresee any problems when in the future, and I think it's this coming year, when the SAT will be giving ESL students more time to finish than, say, other kids who speak a second language? They will be given more time to finish that test. And I remember back in the 80s and so on, when ETS did work on the SAT, research showed that kids needed a little bit more time because of English structure. English has these constructs in sentences where you have
Can she answer the question?
As far as does SAT allow more time? Is that the question?
No, it's right. Whether you expect there to be a difference.
No,
isn't that what you
asked? A difference. I'm thinking that there would be kind of people who would say, why are they getting extra time? I mean, this is a standardized test, and why would ESL kids get extra time? But the research does show that they do need extra time. And I was explaining about sentence structure in English that uses, this is not grammatical, that uses two negatives. And it's very difficult for Spanish speakers who may be translating to really get the idea. So it takes a little bit more time to take a sentence that has a double negative. And I'm not talking about grammatical, just where it's negative to take in. And so the research is there that it does take more time. But will there be a blowback to CDE to, you know, just in general from other people, parents who think, well, why are they getting extra time? Isn't a standardized test a standardized test? And will it be a standardized test if you're giving some kids more time? That's a question.
Good question.
Board Member Flores, I don't think so. For this purpose, the graduation guidelines, sort of the score is the score, and the administration and all of those other things are kind of a different part of the discussion. But I think we have all sorts of things on accommodations with our assessments, and we usually take the recommendations of the assessment. So I don't foresee any more about that. Thank you for making us aware of that. But for this purposes, the score is the score. So however students are allowed to take the test to get the score, it will be standard for this graduation requirement.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are we ready for a motion? Board Member Rankin?
I just have one quick question.
Oh, go ahead.
What's the remediation rate right now? I mean, we talk about having students career and college ready, but when they go to college and they're not ready, obviously there's just no consequences. So what are we changing that from year to year? I mean, is it getting better?
It actually is, yes. So it's gone down by 6 percentage points over the last 2 to 3 years. And we anticipate that, that's one of the purposes, right, of graduation guidelines, is the expectation is that will continue to decrease as these ramp up.
So what is it?
It's currently 34%.
They changed it too, didn't they?
No, the latest remediation report from higher ed. Because I don't think
else?
I have the most recent.
Oh, the actual courses.
Supplemental.
So there's been some language changes. If you're below a certain level, then it's still remediation. If you just need a little help in one 100 level class, then it's called supplemental academic instruction. So it's a technical. Yeah.
Board Member Durham, did you have another question?
No, just rename something and get less of it. We ought to try that. That's a great technique.
Did you have a question or not? Somebody told me you had a question.
Well, I did have a question.
Giggle's okay, too.
What's the status of the... I'll wait for the motion, then I'll pose the question.
Sure.
Thank you.
Motion, please.
She has a question.
Whoops. Can we have a motion and then ask questions or not?
I don't know. It's really not germane to what I think the motion...
Ms. Goff, go ahead.
I just wanted to say the supplemental academic instruction is not separate necessarily. The whole goal, wasn't it, to integrate that in with current leveled coursework. So if somebody needs help in math or algebra, beginning algebra level, they'll be getting that support, but they're still in their current course level. It's not a separate session necessarily. So I understand what you're saying, but you need to understand what I'm saying. it's put
they
together.
Are you saying they don't pay extra for that supplemental?
No. If I'm right, the goal of this going back 4 or 5 years whenever the new policies were being developed was to avoid cost, both to student and to the system, but to... speed this along because all people really needed in many, many cases was just a touch base again on a topic, not necessarily a whole reteaching of an entire content area. So
does that happen at no extra cost?
So I apologize. I know I answered the question rather quickly. So essentially what's happening right now in higher education is supplemental academic instruction is basically additional tutoring that students would pay for that's combined with a 100 level class. So a student is getting 4 credit coursework, right? They're paying for that. And they're paying for supplemental tutoring, basically, which is a less cost than what remediation would have been previously. But that's helpful in any way.
Well, there two possibilities. One is that the graduation standards are too low, or I think the more likely cause is that there is a catastrophic failure in the admissions policies and the implementation of those policies in higher education. I don't personally view this as a problem for K-12. This is a problem created solely by higher education and their chasing of dollars, which causes them to admit students they should not admit.
Can we get to a motion by any chance? I'm ready.
I move to approve the technical changes to the graduation guidelines menu of options and direct staff to bring any future changes as needed or as requested by the board.
I second that.
Thank you. So Board Member Rankin moved to approve the technical changes to the graduation guidelines menu of options and direct staff to bring any future changes as needed or as requested by the board, and that was seconded by Board Member Flores. Comments, questions, discussion?
Question is, what is the status of the addition of, keep wanting to use the GED.
That's the next.
High school equivalent.
That's the next topic after we vote on this.
Well, if we're going to adopt these standards, shouldn't it be part of this discussion as to whether or not it should be included in these standards?
Yeah. I agree.
Because I would, well, I would move to amend the motion to include GED as an option.
I would rather we have a discussion on that next month, and then we can add it. I believe this motion allows us to add that.
Yeah, we
next
can always
month.
Add. So I'm perfectly happy with that if we, okay. if it's on, we come up with it next
okay.
week.
So. I'd like to hear a little bit more. Yeah. I'd like to hear from the business yeah. community about this.
Okay.
What I asked when we had the individual discussions with Ms. Ruthven is districts can add this at their own choice. It does not have to be on
right.
our menu. And
oh,
after
no, they can't add. They can't add something that's not on the menu.
Oh yes, they can.
But no, no. No. Oh no.
They can't use it for graduation.
Yeah. Right.
So they add other graduation requirements. They have the hour requirement.
Yeah.
So then I misunderstood what you said, because what I thought you said was a district can choose to do that, just like they add 56 hours or whatever all else.
So they could add it, but it wouldn't be the only thing that they could use to show that a student's ready in math or English. They would still have to show that they're ready in another
area. Okay. Because yeah. I have serious concerns with exactly as was expressed yeah. there. So I want us to just talk about it. Please.
That's fine. I will not make a motion.
Okay. And we will talk about getting it on the agenda either next month or mm-hmm. the following month, depending on how much we have to do. Board Member Masnick.
I would like a refresher on civics, which is our only state graduation requirement, where that fits in here.
Oh, that's a good question.
Yes, and I apologize, though.
Because one of my concerns is that I don't know how civics is being.
It's not a graduation requirement. It's a requirement.
Yes,
is it a graduation requirement?
It's the only requirement.
Oh, okay, I just thought it was required to be taught, not learned.
Yeah, so, and I would like.
I think you're right.
But I would like to, you know, I talked with Dr. Anthus about this. I would like to see a little more discussion on this about what that looks like in the various districts and whether we are meeting the intent of the requirement.
Yeah.
Or whether we could maybe.
So I think that one of the things you've heard from some of us is that we actually want to see the landscape.
Yeah.
And I think I'm recognizing that that's going to be a lot of work.
It'll take us a while.
But I don't.
We can try.
Yeah, I don't think our comfort level is going to be very high without that. Because we hear, or I think we all hear anecdotal stuff, some of which is correct, some of which is downright incorrect. And for us to get sort of a picture of the landscape of, based on local control, what decisions are being made by districts, so that I can say with some comfort to a business person, here's roughly how this is working across the state. Here's where you look for the information regarding a hire that you want to make of a graduate, Colorado graduate. Goes back to that question, what does it mean to be a Colorado graduate, high school graduate? And I think it's something that we ought to have some way of answering. Please. doable? What do you think?
We'll give it our best shot.
Okay. Does anybody want to vote?
Previous question.
Please. Board Member Durham.
Yes.
Board Member Flores.
Yes.
Board Member Goff.
Yes.
Board Member Masnack.
Yes.
Board Member McClellan.
Yes.
Board Member Rankin.
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder.
Yes.
Passes unanimously.
So we want to talk about GED and we want to talk about civics. Anything else, colleagues, that you'd like to have added, either next month or the following month? I'm a little blank on what the draft is for next month already. Yes.
Teaching of science and
that's not no, it's not graduation. We're talking about the graduation guidelines.
Oh, okay.
Please.
But could we?
That's another topic. I'm looking forward to the response from the assessment folks about where we are on science, I think it's a very appropriate topic once we know what that looks like across the state. Ms. Goff?
Is there an end time point where we really ought to be done talking about this right now? I mean, we've got districts in the middle of doing this four-year thing for kids who are going to be graduating.
Are they in the middle or are they done? I'm a little confused about that.
That's kind of where I was trying to figure out is there an even unspoken deadline to have for districts to have this wrapped up for now? Before, you know, the other thing I'm thinking we're going to talk about at some point is, are we going to do this every 2 years, or are we going to change this?
We just voted differently. We just said.
Okay, now we know that, but the longer we go into this.
Staff bring any future changes as needed or requested instead of 2 years.
Wasn't it supposed to be for the graduating class of 2021?
Yes, so they needed to be done as of August of this year so they could tell their incoming freshmen what their.
Yes.
So this should be findable information.
So one of the things that we could bring forward to you are things that we've heard from districts as far as if you do choose to consider an addition like high school equivalency, is that you could direct staff to do a pilot with a few districts and bring back those results to you. Obviously, certainly not adopted on the menu, and then districts can choose if they want to add it or not, certainly.
Okay. They don't have to add it. Yeah. Ms. Goff, are you okay?
Okay. I'm finished for now. I'm not finished, but I'm done.
I believe we're going to go into exec session. Please.
An executive session has been noticed for today's state board meeting pursuant to 246-423-BI CRS concerning the evaluation of the State Board of Education employee who requested that the matter be addressed in executive session.
I move.
Thank you, Board Member Rankin.
Have a second. Oh, I don't need a second. Right?
Nope, don't need a second.
Anybody opposed? Lunch?